6 public meeting of the Air Resources Board will now come to order. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the clerk of the board please read the roll?
Ms. Berg?
Here.
Ms. Diadamo?
Here.
Supervisor Desaunier? Dr. Gong?
Here.
Ms. Kennard?
Here.
Mayor Leverage? Supervisor Patrick?
Here.
Mrs. Reardon?
Here.
Supervisor Roberts? Dr. Sawyer?
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you. I have a few opening remarks to make before we get started. To witnesses signing up to speak today, please be aware that the board will impose a 3-minute time limit so that everyone gets a chance to speak. I suggest that each speaker put his or her testimony into his or her own words. It is easier for the board to follow if you go straight to your main points. Also, please do not read your written testimony, since it will be entered into the record in its entirety. If anyone in the public wishes to testify on today's agenda items, please sign up with the clerk of the board. Also, if you have a written statement, please provide 30 copies when you sign up. I want to warn you today that the noisy beeper is back on our timing system, so I hope it doesn't startle you. What will happen in imposing our usual 3-minute limit is that after 2 minutes, an orange light comes on. After 3 minutes, you get a beep and the red light. Agenda item 6-10-8. This morning we will consider proposed amendments to the California Consumer Products Regulations to satisfy commitments this board made in the state implementation plan for ozone and to comply with the Air Resources Board's statutory mandate to achieve the maximum feasible reductions in volatile organic compounds from consumer products. Ms. Witherspoon, please introduce this item.
Good morning, Dr. Sawyer, members of the board. The regulation staff is proposing today affects 21 consumer product categories, including automotive care products, cleaners, degreasers, disinfectants, adhesives, fabric care products, personal care products, and waxes and polishes. We are proposing emission limits for 15 of these categories and additional requirements for the remaining 6. Staff is also proposing to prohibit the use of certain toxic air contaminants in consumer products and making minor amendments to clarify the applicability of the aerosol coatings regulation. Ms. Trish Johnson of our Stationary Source Division will present staff's proposal.
We'll wait just a few minutes till we get the projection system operating.
Thank you, Ms. Witherspoon, Dr. Sawyer, and members of the board. As Ms. Witherspoon mentioned, today we are proposing for your consideration amendments to the California Consumer Products Regulation and the Aerosol Coatings Regulation. This slide contains the outline for the following presentation. First, a background on consumer products. Consumer products are defined in state law as chemically formulated products used by household and institutional consumers and include personal, automotive, and household care products. State law requires the ARB to achieve the maximum feasible reductions in volatile organic compounds, or VOCs, from consumer products. The regulations must be technologically and commercially feasible and preserve product forms. Aerosols, pump sprays, solids, and liquids are some examples of product forms. We are also required to consult with public health experts and consider any recommendations they provide regarding the regulation of health benefit products. The statute requires the efficacy of the products that affect public health be maintained. We've been developing VOC regulations for consumer products since 1989. VOC limits for 112 categories of consumer products have been established. These VOC limits apply to antiperspirants and deodorants, aerosol coatings, and other categories such as automotive, household, and personal care products. Since 1990, these limits have achieved a VOC emissions reduction of more than 170 tons per day, or a 50% reduction from regulated categories. The board has also previously prohibited the use of toxic air contaminants such as methylene chloride, perchloroethylene, paradichlorobenzene, and trichloroethylene in several consumer products categories. This slide shows the statewide VOC emissions by major source category. As shown, despite reducing emissions from regulated categories by 50%, the emissions from consumer products are predicted to grow. This contribution is due to population growth as well as controls reducing the emissions from other sources, particularly motor vehicles. Currently, the consumer products is the second largest emission source in the South Coast Air Basin and sixth largest in the San Joaquin Valley Air Basin. By 2023, consumer products will be the largest VOC emission source in the South Coast Air Basin and the third largest in the San Joaquin Valley. While other VOC emission sources are decreasing, without further regulation, consumer products emissions would continue to increase with population growth. I will now present staff's proposed amendments. First, I would like to describe the process we used to develop this proposal. In 2004, we distributed a survey that requested information on 250 different categories of consumer products. We received information on more than 26,000 products. We analyzed survey forms, entered data into a database, and communicated with company contacts to make certain that the information was correct. Using survey data, staff analyzed the VOC emissions for each category, examined the VOC percent distribution of products, studied product labels, identified key ingredients used, and conducted patent literature and technology reviews. As a result, we identified 50 categories for possible control from the 250 surveyed categories. These 50 categories had significant VOC emissions and a VOC distribution that showed potential for regulation. This will be described more on the next slide. We first presented the 50 categories at a public meeting in March of this year. After March, we continued to research and refine categories and held regular public meetings. To allow more time to evaluate technical issues, some of the original categories were deferred until next year. Of the 50 categories originally identified, 15 are being proposed for regulation today. When proposing a VOC limit, staff uses many important pieces of data, several of which are presented on this slide. The VOC distribution, as shown in the diagram, is one example of critical information. In this example diagram, there is potential for regulation as products exist at both a high and low percent VOC. Once a limit is proposed that reflects the cleanest technology, staff considers the percentage of the market and number of products that would meet the proposed limit. Additionally, we may propose a limit that can be achieved through transfer of existing formulation technologies. An example of this specific application is discussed in detail on the next slide. In January 2002, ARB sponsored research to investigate the transfer of water-based technology used in parts washers to aerosol form for automotive products. The Institute for Research and Technical Assistance, or IRTA, was awarded the contract. Four categories of products, as shown on this slide, were investigated by IRTA. The study found that low VOC and low toxicity cleaners slash degreasers, similar to those used in parts washers, could be transferred to the aerosol form. Products that performed favorably were either water-based or exempt organic solvent-based. The study concluded that aerosol automotive products could be reformulated with no more than 10% VOC. The final report for this research was approved by ARB's Research Screening Committee. While the overall results of the study were favorable, it was also discovered that formulating into an aerosol form presented challenges that would require further development and refinement. Staff acknowledges that a majority of products are currently at about 45% VOC, and reformulating to 10% VOC may be difficult for some manufacturers. As you will hear later in this presentation, we are proposing that extra time beyond 2008 be allowed for manufacturers to achieve 10% VOC for these product categories. This slide provides an overview of the proposed amendments, which will be discussed in greater detail on the following five slides. The proposed amendments include new VOC limits for 15 categories, three of which are new categories that have not been regulated before. We are also proposing to clarify definitions and overlapping requirements in the Consumer Products Regulation and the Aerosol Coatings Regulation. Additionally, we are proposing to prohibit the use of three toxic air contaminants, methylene chloride, perchloroethylene, and trichloroethylene, in four product categories. Also, to address technical reformulation difficulties, we propose to adjust the VOC limit for nail polish removers and to exempt certain electronic cleaners from a soon-to-be-effective VOC limit. Several other minor changes are being proposed that will clarify, simplify, and better organize the regulations. This slide, along with the three following slides, lists the 15 categories included in staff's original proposal. Each slide provides the product category, subcategory, proposed VOC limit, and corresponding effective date. It should be noted that the disinfectant and sanitizer categories include health benefit products. Staff consulted with representatives from the California Department of Health Services and other public health organizations to ensure that our proposal would not affect the efficacy of these products. We will monitor industry's progress in complying with the VOC limits prior to the effective dates. We are also proposing to prohibit the use of methylene chloride, perchloroethylene, and trichloroethylene from the four product categories listed here. While these compounds are not currently used, our objective is to prevent their use where the possibility exists. We propose that the prohibition be effective on December 31st, 2008. This proposal is consistent with the board's prior actions for automotive products and aerosol adhesives. I'll move on now to a discussion of the overall impacts of our proposal. There will be significant environmental benefits from this proposal. Overall, the proposed amendments will achieve 11.7 tons per day VOC reductions statewide, 5 tons per day in the South Coast Air Basin, and 1.2 tons per day in the San Joaquin Valley Air Basin by December 31st, 2012. Staff's proposal to eliminate the use of chlorinated toxic air contaminants will prevent an increase in emissions of these compounds in categories where the possibility for use exists. We do not expect any significant adverse environmental impacts as a result of the proposal. With specific exclusions to the disinfectant and sanitizer categories, the proposal will not adversely affect the efficacy of health benefit products. The overall costs of the proposal are shown here. These figures represent averages. There exists some variability in each category. These costs compare favorably with other consumer products regulations adopted previously by the board. Now I'll discuss the comments that have been brought to our attention as a result of staff's proposal. Numerous comments were received as a result of our proposal. We would like to highlight the comments that fall into the five main themes featured on this slide. The largest number of comments involved the VOC limits proposed for the four automotive categories. Many manufacturers have commented that the December 31st, 2008 effective date for the 10% VOC limits proposed cannot be met. Affected industry is concerned that they may not be able to meet the significant technical challenge of moving a whole line of automotive products from a VOC of about 45% to 10% in the 2008 timeframe. In a moment, I'll discuss a modification to the proposal that addresses this issue. The next item listed is the definition changes to the rubber/vinyl protectants category. Staff is proposing changes to address a drafting error in the original definition. This drafting error made it unclear that products used on rubber or vinyl were intended to be regulated under this category. Certain manufacturers believe their tire dressing products contain resins and are therefore aerosol coatings and should be subject to the aerosol coatings regulation. Other manufacturers understood that these products did indeed qualify as rubber and vinyl protectants and reformulated their products to meet the 10% VOC limit effective January 1, 2005. In addition, we have received comments that our proposed modifications inadvertently captured aerosol products used on other substrates. Shortly, I will discuss a modification to the original proposal for this category to address this issue. The third item is the VOC limits proposed for the floor polish or wax subcategories. One manufacturer believes a 3% VOC content is necessary for a niche group of products known as burnished floor finishes. These products are designed to be used with high-speed burnishing machines. Staff has not found technical justification for this because low and zero VOC products compatible with high-speed burnishing machines exist. There is also a very high compliant market share for the proposed 1% VOC limits. We have worked with this manufacturer to explore alternatives they may qualify for under the compliance options afforded in the regulation, including the innovative product provision and the alternative control plan. The fourth item concerns the 75% VOC limit for electronic cleaners, effective December 31, 2006. Manufacturers have requested further exclusions to the definition. Staff believes that there is justification to this claim and is proposing an amendment to respond to this concern. The last item listed involves an exclusion to the disinfectant and sanitizer categories for pre-moistened wipes or towelette disinfectant or sanitizer products used exclusively in medical settings. This comment was received from a public health organization. Additionally, manufacturers have expressed concerns about products that may be subject to multiple VOC limits, such as cleaner/disinfectant products. These concerns will be addressed momentarily when I discuss staff's proposed 15-day changes. An additional comment was received recently requesting more time for the multi-purpose solvent definition to become effective. As a result of the comments we received, we are proposing several modifications to the original proposal. Since the release of the staff report, we have continued to work with affected industry on the automotive cleaning categories. We acknowledge that the 10% VOC limits are challenging and support that more time is needed to reformulate product lines. On the following slide, I will present staff's proposed amendments to the VOC limits and effective dates for these four specific categories. For the rubber/vinyl protectants comments, we intend to continue to work with industry. Our objective is to correctly describe in the regulation that products used on tires be included and other aerosol products not be included in this category, as was originally intended when this category's VOC limit was adopted in 1997. Some manufacturers believe that because their product contains a resin, they should be considered an aerosol coating. Regardless of formulation, products applied to tires to protect or provide a shine are rubber/vinyl protectants, as was described in the 1997 staff report. We intend to close the loophole that exists in this category's definition and clarify that all products used on tires are subject to the Consumer Products Regulation, and specifically the 10% VOC limit for rubber/vinyl protectants. I'll now address the issues raised by interested parties regarding the disinfectant and sanitizer definitions. We are proposing to slightly modify these definitions, excluding pre-moistened wipes or towelettes that are used in medical settings. Additionally, we intend to work with manufacturers to clarify requirements for products subject to multiple VOC limits, such as cleaner/disinfectant products, as mentioned previously. To address concerns about the 75% VOC limit effective December 31, 2006 for electronic cleaners, we are proposing a one-year extension to allow industry more time to investigate reformulation options in the absence of anticipated VOC exemptions. We also intend to continue to work with industry to determine if exclusions from this category are necessary. The last modification not featured on this slide is a change to the multi-purpose solvent category definition. This modification clarifies that the definition change in the staff report will become effective January 1st, 2008 to allow manufacturers more time. As described earlier, this slide contains our proposed modifications to the VOC limits and effective dates for the four automotive categories listed here. We have worked diligently with affected industry since the release of the staff report and acknowledge that the 10% VOC limits are challenging. We propose 20% interim VOC limits effective December 31, 2008 for brake cleaners, carburetor or fuel injection air intake cleaners, and aerosol general purpose degreasers. 10% VOC limits for each category would be effective December 31st, 2012. A majority of the reductions will be achieved at the 20% interim step. We are proposing to retain the original 10% limit for engine degreasers, but move the effective date to December 31st, 2010. Further, we are proposing to commit to a technical review of industry's progress in reformulating affected products to meet the 10% VOC limits at least 18 months prior to the 2012 effective date. In summary, this proposal will achieve an emissions reduction of at least 11.7 tons per day by 2012. With the proposed 15-day changes, staff anticipates additional reductions above 11.7 tons per day. The proposed amendments are technologically and commercially feasible and will not eliminate product forms. Additionally, staff has determined that the amendments are cost-effective. Finally, the proposal will prevent exposure to toxic air contaminants. To conclude, we recommend that you adopt the proposed amendments with the modifications described today. We'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson. Madam Ombudsman, please describe the public participation process that occurred while this item was being developed and report any concerns or comments you may have to the board at this time.
Thank you. Chairman Sawyer and members of the board, this regulation has been developed with input from local air districts and agencies, US EPA, the consumer product manufacturers, chemical producers, marketers, and trade associations. Staff began the process to develop the 2006 amendments with a comprehensive survey previously described by staff. In 2004, a subcommittee of the Consumer Products Working Group was formed to serve as a forum for communication. Participation in the work group was open to the public. The first meeting was held on August 25, 2004, and the second work group meeting held on September 30, 2004. In November 2004, a new survey was mailed to the companies and was also posted on the Internet on the same day. Additionally, a survey training session was held on December 3rd, 2004, via webcast. Four public meetings of the work group were conducted from January 2006 through July of 2006. All four meetings had teleconference capability. The first public meeting was held in Sacramento on January 19, 2006, with about 27 attendees and 79 participants on the phone. Second meeting was held on March 27th in Sacramento, where approximately 25 stakeholders attended with 64 participants on the phone. The third meeting was held on June 1st in Sacramento with 36 stakeholders attending and 85 people on the phone. The fourth was held on July 26th in Sacramento with 43 participants and 92 people on the phone. Staff also held one public meeting on September 14, 2006 in Sacramento with approximately 22 industry representatives attending and 74 participants on the phone. Staff also held individual meetings and conference calls with industry representatives and various trade associations. Numerous meetings were held with the Consumer Specialty Products Association and the Cosmetic, Toiletry, and Fragrance Association. The staff report was mailed and posted to the Internet on September 29, 2006. More than 4,000 companies and interested parties, including environmental organizations, received the information via the mail, and over 650 subscribers received notification via the listserv. Staff provided a comprehensive summary of industry's concerns during their presentation and their plans to address them. I should add only that car enthusiasts have expressed concerns about automotive cleaning products and how these changes may affect their specialty cars. That concludes my comments.
Thank you very much. Do the board members have any questions? Dr. Gawin.
Two quick questions at this moment. One pertains to disinfectants and sanitizers. You mentioned something about toilets used in the medical field. What about other disinfectants that are used in hospital settings, in clinic settings? Are they also affected by this VOC regulation in any way?
They would be affected. The comments that we received were specific to the pre-moistened towelettes. The other products would be affected by this, but we haven't had indication that that would cause public health concern.
Was that specific question specifically addressed by public health agencies that you consulted?
The Department of Health Services is aware of our proposal and all of the ins and outs of it and did not have any opposition to it as a result.
Working in a hospital, I know that we're under scrutiny to reduce medical errors, infections in the hospital. So I expressed some concern myself, obviously, about that, and I would encourage you to really target that question about liquid, even aerosol disinfectants in a medical setting. Are we diminishing the efficacy of that when we're reducing the VOCs? That's killing the microorganisms, et cetera.
Dr. Gong, we worked with the Department of Health Services on the aerosol disinfectants, and they were in support of the 70% VOC limit that we were proposing there. And for the 1% limit, there were concerns about medical equipment, the medical settings, and all of that, so we're proposing an exemption for those products. And we're also proposing an exemption for the pre-poisoned wipes that are used in the medical or veterinary facilities. And we've received a comment from a manufacturer that the pre-moistened wipe exemption should be expanded. And so during the 15-day, while we're preparing the 15-day changes, we will consult with that company, and we've already talked to them, and see what their concerns are, and we'll consult again with the Department of Health Services on that issue.
Thank you. And my second question regards the electronic cleaners. I was seeking clarification why it's 75%, but you're still looking into it. I didn't quite understand that. What makes it so different from the others in that sense, I guess, is my question.
This is Carla Takemoto. The electronic cleaner category, there are a number of different types of products that have specific end uses that are included within that category. And we became aware of a problem with certain products that are used to clean, for example, circuit boards and things of that nature that have relied on a compound that is no longer being produced due to it being a stratospheric ozone depleter. So we haven't come up with a suitable way to have those specific products reformulate. We do have pending VOC exemption petitions that may take care of this issue, but we believe that the extra year is warranted so that we can evaluate whether the VOC exemptions are appropriate or not.
Yes, Ms. Bird.
Thank you. On slide 5, could you just clarify for me the legal meaning for preserved product form?
Yeah, this is David Mallory of the staff. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yes, this is Bob Jenny. Product form means the physical form of the product, such as aerosol, liquid, wipes, stuff like that. And we this is an issue that we've dealt with in the past, and there's actually an opinion that we got from the Attorney General's office that agree with our interpretation.
So when we look at the automotive, for example, taking the technology from part washers, which I don't believe is an aerosol form, to an aerosol form, then would that be in conflict with that or not?
No, the issue is whether aerosol forms of a product can continue to exist. I think what that's talking about is the particular formulation technology that's used to make the product. But as long as an aerosol form can continue to exist, regardless of what formulation technology is used, it does not run afoul of that provision in the Health and Safety Code.
Okay, thank you. Then also on slide 7, when we're looking at the total VOC emissions, are the 2010 emissions taking in consideration this regulation?
I do not.
Thank you very much.
I also have a few questions to clarify some of this. The dividing line between consumer products and industrial products, I think of consumer products as being something I can go to the grocery store and buy, and something like a circuit board cleaner is not something I'm likely to do. But, and if it's used in an industrial application where the industry may have a mechanism for recovering the vapors, that comes under an entirely different control program, is
That's correct.
Window washer fluid, is there a single compound that's used in that, or is there a choice of alcohols, I think, that can be used? And is the photochemical reactivity part of the consideration?
This was strictly a mass way of looking at it. There are several compounds that can be used, but we were strictly looking at the mass VOC reductions.
And if I don't know if there are, but if there were a low photochemical reactivity compound which a supplier wanted to use, would that be allowed to count in some way?
This limit is not based on incremental reactivity, but just so you know, Dr. Sawyer, the VOCs that are used in here are in these products are fairly low reactive on the overall scale, but there would be no additional credit given for using a lower reactive VOC.
Okay, and I assume nobody asked for that type of a break? Or?
No, they did not.
Inventory. The projected growth in future years, that's based upon population or a change in the market or?
Population, yes.
And where the efficiency or efficacy of a product might be diminished by its reformulation, did you take into consideration that people might use more to make up for the fact that it didn't work so well?
In specific cases, that could be considered if it is brought up to us. But generally, we set limits where products make similar claims and have market share, therefore it's assumed they meet the basic function and can continue to work at those levels.
Thank you very much. Are there any more questions from board members? Ms. Berg.
Thank you.
I just want to make sure I understand one of Dr. Sawyer's points on the electronic circuit board. If a manufacturer is cleaning those circuit boards, that follows under a different rule than over-the-counter. Of course, I can't imagine. I have a hard enough time turning on my computer, but buying something to clean my computer circuit board, is that what we're talking about? Do I understand that correctly?
Well, actually, there are consumers such as ourselves that probably would take on the task of trying to clean their computers. But I believe that what you said initially is correct. If you are using an electronic cleaner directly in the manufacture of a computer or some other electronic device, that is not covered by our regulation. But if you were to go into a computer repair store and they would clean your circuit board at the repair store, that would be covered by our regulation.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes. Ms. Diodama.
I have a question, and I think I already know the answer to this, but when I go shopping for household cleaning products, for example, I'm always befuddled about what to buy, thinking that if it smells bad, it's probably worse for the environment, and it doesn't smell as bad. And I don't know that that's, in fact, I doubt that that's the case. And I know years ago we were exploring the possibility of a green label, and I haven't heard any talk about that recently, but just wondering if there's any way to get additional information out to consumers who perhaps want to go further than the regulation.
In the 2003 state implementation plan, we did include a measure, perhaps it was the prior state implementation plan, for examining labeling, and there was a supposition
that with the proper labels, people would choose low VOC products and we would be able to claim emission reductions. When we got further into labeling, we were befuddled by how to communicate what was low VOC, what was low toxicity, what was non-stratospheric ozone depleting, you know, what had low greenhouse gas effects, et cetera, and the amount of space available on the labels. And then also there were no compelling studies about the effect on consumer behavior. The effort ran aground. There's still interest that we pursue it. We haven't got it under development at the moment. It's sort of there as a possibility, and we might pick it up again at some point. But we spent a couple of years trying to make something happen and couldn't quite come to resolution on what would be effective.
Well, I'm wondering if the information is there, but it's just too complex to put on a label. Could we put out information to consumers that want to know more and would be willing to go through a handout?
We could look at that approach, too, like we have a website for green cars, and so does US EPA, so there's places to look for that kind of information, not on the label itself.
Okay, let's begin the public testimony. The first three witnesses will be Doug Raymond, Elaine Chang, and Lee Lockie. Mr. Raymond.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sawyer, members of the board. I'm here today representing several companies that could not make it. The first one is the National Aerosol Association. I'd like to say that we appreciate everything that the staff has done. As they showed you, they went through an enormous amount of paperwork, an enormous amount of data, and were very cooperative for most of the regulation. Special thanks to David Mallory. He spent a lot of time working with us, and we appreciate that. Going on to the electronic cleaner, I'm here on behalf of AGC, Solvay, DuPont, and the Honeywell Company to support the 15-day resolution. And just to clarify a little bit of what you were asking about between industrial and consumer, there is a very gray area between industrial and service and or commercial type work. If it is strictly manufacturing, it is exempt. But if it is used in any type of commercial-type application, for example, if it was used in the telephone industry or somewhere else, it would actually fall under the Consumer Products Reg. And so we really do believe that this 1 year is warranted. This is a very small but important niche. Second issue is for the automotive maintenance products. I'm here on behalf of Radiator Specialty, who will have a representative here, and we'll talk. We support the resolution as it is. It's basically a win-win situation. The state will eventually get its 10%, but originally we will get the 20%, which is needed for the emission reductions up front. We thank the staff for continuing to work. The same thing for the WD-40 company with the general purpose degreaser. The time was needed. They can meet the original 20% in 2 years, but they need the extra 10% or the extra 4 years for the 10%. And as you know, WD-40 is a California company. And lastly, for the Clear Plays company, we'd like to support the general purpose cleaner category of 8%. We believe the 8% will let them produce an effective and efficient product. And I'm here to answer any questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Chang.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. Thank you for the opportunity to address you this morning. I have a few slides to help me move through quickly. The district staff has two very specific recommendations this morning. The first is we'll ask you not to delay the category specific related to general degreasing and automotive cleaning for the 10%. We believe 2008 is achievable. Secondly, we ask you to, as part of your adoption resolution, to direct the staff to consider 2.5%, similar to what we have in our district, Rule 1171 for general cleaning. We have that 2.5% in place since 2003, and I'll explain to you why. We will urge you to consider these four issues before you make your decision today, and I will go through them quickly. As your staff pointed out, that consumer product is the single largest category in the South Coast, also as well as in the state. But I also like to point out to you, when you compare the second largest, the passenger vehicle category, consumer product is almost twice as big as the second largest. In fact, based on your latest NFAT 2007, the second category, 51 tons, becomes 34 tons. It's almost three times, only one-third of a consumer product. So you have done a great deal of work in the automotive, in the passenger cars category. If we need more additional reductions, we know which category to look for. The next issue is regarding our 2003 AQMP commitment. As staff indicated to you, this proposed rule is to fulfill your 2003 Air Quality Management Plan commitment. You have committed 169 tons VOC and NOx combined. As of today, you achieved 51 tons, about one-third of the commitment by 2010. Today's 5 tons per day will help to close the gap somewhat. But if you look at the specific commitment for consumer product, you are short 9 tons per day. Today's 5 tons will help to close the gap again, but should be done before 2010. If we look beyond the 2010 commitment, if we look at potentially the AR ozone reduction needed by 2020, we need to get 50% beyond what's currently already adopted. So significant challenge ahead of us that we need to seek the opportunity to do the reduction soon. Lastly, we don't believe the delay is warranted. My colleague, Ms. Lockie, will explain the technical feasibility and the cost effectiveness. We understand the delay doesn't mean you forego reductions, but our concern is that if we push the implementation date beyond 2008, very likely we're going to come back for the second and third round of reductions in consumer products. This will eventually push us off the planning horizon of 2020. So we want you to consider that. Lastly, a few months ago, we're here debating potential ozone benefit of 0.8 tons of VOC reductions versus a residual PERC cancer risk in the ambient air. We believe this is a time to maximize the reductions, and at the earliest possible day, the delay will cost approximately 3 tons in the South Coast air basin alone. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Question, Ms. Diodama.
On slide 4, 112 tons per day compared to the other categories. Does that include consumer use of pesticides?
Not in consumer products, no.
Thank you.
Ms. Bird?
Good morning. On the cleaning solvent rule, the 1171, aren't there some industries where we're having some challenges on that low VOC, like the printing ink industry,
right,
and
printing,
things like that?
That's correct. But for the general cleaning, specific automotive cleaning, 25 gram per liter or 2.5% is being placed, and we have found no problems.
And that really pretty well takes that product to acetone?
Acetone or water-based.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like just to jump in here a second. Ms. Diodama's question about the consumer products, including pesticides, I believe it does include the pesticide component.
Okay, that's kind of what I thought.
Yeah, consumer use of pesticides.
Right, and I'm aware of efforts being currently undertaken by the Department of Pesticides. I know that Ms. Terry has been working closely with them on some reformulation issues as it relates to agriculture, but I'm not familiar with those reformulation issues in the consumer product category, and I'm assuming that if they're reformulating for one, they're reformulating for the other. Would there be any associated benefits with the reformulation?
What Department of Pesticide Regulation regulates is they, when you spray pesticides on crops, they are doing their plan is to reduce those VOC emissions. And what the Consumer Product Regulation covers is the consumer use of pesticides. So when you go to the Home Depot and you see all those pesticides up there that, that consumers buy, that's pretty much what our regulation covers. And it's a different universe of sources. And maybe someone else can answer if there's technology transfer between the two areas. I'm not sure whether there is or not.
Maybe I could just address where DPR is going at this point in time. And a lot of reformulation is one of the three strategies they're looking at. Number one, they're looking at a lot of changes to application techniques. Secondarily, a major emphasis is on fumigants, which is a single, mostly methyl bromide, not, you know, household product. So there isn't a lot of overlap. But certainly we've encouraged the agricultural production pesticides to go down a similar path as we've done with consumer products to look at the opportunities for reformulation.
Well, it's been a while since I looked at these numbers, but I know that a while ago I saw a chart that indicates pretty high VOC coming from consumer usage. And so just wondering if we could look into this further. Application changes are pretty challenging in the consumer product area. With industrial use, agricultural use, I think that's a little easier to change habits because they can go through training and that sort of thing. But household use is another matter, so we'd be pretty much stuck with reformulation. So just wondering if staff is looking into that
yes.
anytime soon.
Currently, we have several limits for aerosol household pesticides. And those limits are had come into effect very recently, and they get an extra year due to federal and state registration. So we have not surveyed those products recently. However, we intend to do that in a survey next year, and at that time we'll have the data necessary to evaluate whether further reductions are appropriate for the aerosol household pesticides.
Something else that's changing in the consumer market is the delivery of the product out of its container. There's different technologies being applied there. So you're not asking the consumer to do something different, but the way it gets out of the bottle or the can causes there to be less excess emissions.
If I could just add one other comment. This is Bob Fletcher. Just to be clear, the DPR tons that they're looking at reformulating and looking at the fumigants are not included in the 112. Ton per day.
Okay. Mr. Lockie? And then we will have Katie Wolf, Julia Quint, and Virginia St. John. Excuse me? Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me, Ms. Lockie.
Even some of my best friends may try that. good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is Lee Lockie, and I'm with the South Coast AQMD, and I'm following Dr. Chang to explain some of the reasoning behind our opposition to this particular portion of the proposal being considered today. The categories that we're going to be talking about, and by the way, I noticed this morning that there's one that's missing from this list. We're primarily concerned about the delays, as Dr. Chang mentioned, in automotive cleaning. We do support the proposed 7% limit, VOC limit, for adhesives. And our concerns are automotive brake cleaners, carburetor cleaners, and also engine degreasers, as well as the general purpose degreasers, and the establishment of the interim limit of 20% and the delay in the implementation of the 10%. The primary reason is that since 1999, when our Rule 1171 came into effect, the technology was established, and since that time has been widespread at actually well below 10% VOC content. It's been tested and proven in many facilities, and our inspectors have gone out recently and actually confirmed this by visiting particularly the automotive dealerships, who are required to use 25 grams per liter if they're large users. And they often choose to use the aerosol products. So these products have been successfully reformulated and are in use, and they might require a little bit more engine or a little bit more elbow grease, but they're working. So it's been tested in facilities, and they are also cost-effective, very comparable in cost to the previous high VOC materials. This is just a list of the types of the manufacturers. There are numerous manufacturers who have been geared up to market these products in South Coast for 5 to 10 years. Now, as I said, they're already available. Rule 1171 requires that the use of for large users of 25 grams per liter. Many dealerships, small users, can use higher VOC products, but they must be in compliance with the CARB limits. And the large dealerships often choose not to do the record keeping that keeps them under that limit as a small user. And so most of them that we've visited in South Coast have chosen to use the compliant materials subject to 25 grams per liter. And in conclusion, with respect to adhesives, again, I want to point out that we support the proposal, and we find no technical concerns with the 10% by 2008. We think that it's adequate time, and I thank you very much.
Would staff comment upon what we've heard, the 10% sooner issue?
Particularly the third slide, I think.
I guess I will attempt to comment on that. Most of these products that we're talking about are in aerosol form. And to go from around 45% VOC down to 10% VOC is actually a pretty remarkable change. And we believe that going down to 10% in an aerosol product, it is going to require a change from probably an organic solvent-based technology to water-based technology. And water-based technology in aerosol form, it is challenging, and we believe that given the number of products that need to be reformulated, the R&D necessary to do that, and given that most of the companies that make a brake cleaner also make products in every other category, and we believe that that additional time is warranted to get through their full line of products. Ms. Locke also referred to that they may require a little more elbow grease. There is going to be a training component within this, because while the products will work, they are going to work differently, and there's going to need to be time to kind of train the end users and get them used to the new technology. And that's why we believe the extra time is warranted.
Mayor Lovers?
If you could just go back and comment explicitly, I guess, on the third. I don't know if we have third slide. One which begins low VOC. Next one. Wrong. That one. Oh, you had it. That was it. Is that it? Okay, I can't quite see.
Yeah, if you would, if staff would comment directly on these three points, that one, there are compliant products available. They have been tested. They are cost effective. You agree with these three conclusions or not?
I think in general we do agree that there are starting to be some products on the market at 10% VOC, and frankly that was the result of the research study that we talked about in the presentation earlier, showed that we could get an aerosol product with about 10% VOC. And yes, these products were tested in facilities. It was a field study, and we are aware that in some businesses in the South Coast, they are using these very low VOC aerosol products. And we believe that with time and production increases, that they will become cost effective.
And obviously, how widely used are these products on the South Coast?
The aerosol, the compliant aerosol products, are used by most of the automobile dealerships who have chosen to use the compliant aerosol products in large quantities. And the technology transfer has occurred from the 1999 amendments almost 7 years ago when they became into effect. So there are numerous manufacturers, and they're widely used throughout the industry in the South Coast Air Basin. And this has been confirmed by our recent field inspections.
Yeah.
Staff will have to provide the percentages, but our surveys show that the products are there. They're a small percentage of the market. Most of the major manufacturers that you'll be hearing from later do not currently make those. And really what the discussion is over how much time do you afford the industry to change over, and what's the best course to do that. We in the South Coast, I think, agree are on the final limit. We felt that it was prudent to provide a significant amount of additional time over our original proposal to ensure that the products that get out there and the manufacturers stand behind work, and to work with the industry that isn't using them, the small shops, the consumer users, and others. And I think you'll hear testimony later about the doubts and problems that some of the manufacturers feel they'll have if we were to go ahead with the original proposal.
Ms. Berg.
I guess the thing that I'm struggling with is that we've had 5-6 years going to school in the South Coast Air Quality area, and why do we need another 6 to 8 years? If we have, I mean, Ford Motor, some of these companies that they have listed here aren't small companies. This isn't a niched market. And so why is it that we need another 6 to 8 years?
Carla, do you have the percentage of market penetration right now?
Well, our most recent data is from the 2003 calendar year, but our data show that when we look at a product with 10% VOC content, that there is a very, very low compliant market share, maybe 3 or 5% of the market. So they are not widely used. They are not widely accepted. And we believe that additional time is warranted to, I guess, get the end users used to the change and how the product is going to come out of the can, how the product is going to behave, and how you're going to have to work with the product to get the cleaning to occur.
Ms. Lockie, do you have any market statistics? The automotive refinish and repair industry in your district should be pretty significant compared to the rest of the state. Do you have data?
I don't have the exact number of facilities with me today, but I can tell you that 80 to 90% of the auto repair facilities, large and small, are using the technology that has been transferred to the aerosol spray technology right now, and they've been doing it for since 1999. We believe that this can easily be made widespread in the 2-year period that they've proposed initially for the implementation of the 10%. Enough of the large users have been using this. There are many manufacturers who are supplying these materials and can easily gear up for more widespread distribution and training.
I'd like to clarify that. This is Bob Barham. What we found when we looked at the South Coast products were primarily the way that they complied was through reformulation to acetone. And what we're looking at is reformulation ultimately to water-based solutions. And that's where the problem lies, is that transition to the water-based product, getting it into the can, getting it out of the can, getting it not to react in the can. There are a number of technical issues that have to be addressed as part of this transition, and that's, as described earlier, is why we believe more time is warranted.
And the acetone product is an extremely flammable product. I think purpose of my fellow board members, that is an important component.
Can I ask staff to go over again the two-step phase in where staff is proposing in 2008 that there would be a 20% limit down from 45% today, and then in four more years, the 10%. Can you go over your logic for that two-step phase in?
We worked extensively with the industry on what would be involved in reformulating all of their product lines and reformulating down to 10%. And I believe that the manufacturers will tell you that given time that the 10% is feasible, and that is what we have heard from the industry, and they asked for that additional time because how the products will behave. It is a different technology. But they also have agreed that we need emission reductions in the near term, and I believe that you will hear that they are in support of the step down to the 20% VOC product. And we believe that that interim limit is going to get us the majority of the emission reductions anyway, going from 45 to down to the 20%. We're going to get the lion's share of the emission reductions, and the 10% is out there in the future, and we're going to get that too. We think that going to 20%, there will probably still be organic solvent-based products out there that they will continue to use a lot of acetone to make those products. But we think that the extra 10% is going to be a major technology change for them, and we're going to believe that they should have that time to do that.
Thank you very much. Ms. Wolt?
Good morning. My name is Katie Wolf, and I'm director of the Institute for Research and Technical Assistance. It was my organization that did the project that focused on developing and demonstrating alternatives, automotive aerosol cleaning products that would meet the 10% VOC limit. And my comments today focus on the automotive aerosol cleaners. I strongly support the original proposal that the staff put forth, which was to phase the VOC content from about 45% down to 10% by 2008. And I strongly oppose the staff industry compromise that would allow an interim limit of 20% and extend the compliance date out to 2012, which is more than 6 years from now. And I oppose the extension and phase down for three reasons. First, as you heard from Elaine Chang and Lee Lockie from the South Coast Air Quality Management District, there are many facilities in the South Coast Basin that are already meeting the 10% limit. In fact, it's a much lower limit that they are meeting, a limit of 25 gram per liter or about 2.5%. Now, over the last decade, I've worked with hundreds of auto repair facilities on various different types of cleaning operations, and it is primarily the large dealerships right now who are using these compliant products, and they've been using them for well over 2 years, and they are using them routinely on a daily basis, and they are operating productively. So this demonstrates that there are these alternatives that have been demonstrated in practice, so there is no reason to wait 6 more years.
Second, allowing the delay will exacerbate an environmental justice issue. Many of the solvents that are used in the high VOC aerosol products that are being used today are also classified as toxic air contaminants. Such solvents as toluene, xylene, methyl alcohol, and hexane. Many of the workers in auto repair facilities are people of color. And many of the people who live in communities surrounding the auto repair facilities are people of color, and they are low income. They are being exposed on a daily basis to these materials, and they pose a toxic risk. By going down to 10% in 2008, you would actually reduce or eliminate this toxic risk. Third, I'm concerned about the tone of the industry comments since this compromise with the staff was reached. The industry says that they will comply with the 20% interim limit and the 10% limit, but only if it's demonstrated that this can be achieved in practice. That seems to me that it gives them an out to say that it hasn't been demonstrated in practice. And we know that's not true from the South Coast experience. So in summary, then, I would just urge the board to adopt the original proposal that phases the VOC content down to 10% by 2008. And these materials that meet this limit are already available, and we can reduce the risk to community members and workers in doing it more quickly as well. The board should even consider...
I must ask you to conclude, please.
Yes. I would also suggest that the board consider a future amendment that would reduce the VOC content lower to 2.5%. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Ms. Quint?
My name is Julia Quint, and I'm a toxicologist. And although I've spent most of my career as a government scientist working to prevent chronic illness and disease for workers, I am speaking on my own behalf today. And I want to urge the board, if possible, to adopt the original proposal of 10% by 2008. And I want to just say briefly that the reason that I have joined, that have come here to give these comments, is that I started to realize the benefits to workers of VOC reductions and pollution prevention in general after some mechanics suffered nerve damage when N-hexane was formulated into brake cleaners as it had never been done before. And we had auto mechanics suffering peripheral neuropathy. And it was at that point that I started working with Cal EPA, US EPA, the Institute for Research and Technical Assistance, and South Coast to make sure that this unintended consequence never happened again. And we have successfully collaborated. I participate on technical advisory groups, and we had a US EPA-sponsored project in automotive repair and disseminated information promoting the use of water-based and less toxic solvents in aerosol products. And so I think the benefit, although it isn't the mandate of CARB or any environmental protection agency to consider workers, it's not my mandate either in the work that I do on a daily basis to consider outside air, but I do now because I think integrating those two concepts is extremely important and ultimately will benefit small employers because these are very technical issues. When you talk about chemicals, nobody can pronounce them or understand them. The regulations that we do have in place are often not, people find it hard to comply. Material safety data sheets are hard to understand. The formulations change. Training doesn't occur on the health hazards. All of this is very complicated, and especially for small businesses. So we can work together by reducing VOCs and, from my perspective, decreasing health risks to workers. So thank you very much for listening to me.
Thank you. Ms. St. John, and then we will have Doug Raymond, Harry Zechman, and Mark Kubiak.
Thank you, Chairman and members of the board. My name is Virginia St. Jean. I'm an industrial hygienist with the San Francisco Department of Public Health. I am a hazardous materials regulator, but also we are implementing green awards programs for small businesses in San Francisco. specifically been working with Dr. Wolf and Dr. Quint on communicating the safer alternatives to automotive industries in San Francisco that tied in with the solvent change for stationary parts washers in the Bay Area. Now, in San Francisco, they have reduced the VOC limits for stationary parts washers for the automotive industry to less than 50 grams per liter. And that has successfully converted the automotive industry in San Francisco to waterborne parts washers, almost across the board. Fabulous, fabulous implementation of a local regulation. But the problem is, I've seen a real resistance to get rid of aerosol use. Now, aerosol automotive cleaners are great, they're very effective, but they're a very high risk exposure to the workers of the solvents within the container. I'm not exactly sure we need aerosol containers to begin with, number one. We're extremely concerned about the toxicity of the ingredients we're seeing in the aerosols to meet the current VOC compliance. These are Prop 65 chemicals, as my predecessors mentioned. They're quite toxic. Neurotoxins, carcinogens, they're Prop 65 listed. There's really no reason to have toluene and xylene and ethylbenzene and these things in these parts washers anymore. Pump sprays work very well. There are automotive dishwashing type cleaners. There are all sorts of new ways of parts washing out there. Without risk communication to the automotive industry about the hazards of these solvents, granted, that is very difficult. Toxicity is about chlorinated solvents and neurotoxins, peripheral neurotoxins. That's not easy. But our automotive industry, our automotive repair facilities in San Francisco have asked for information on how to safely choose aerosols that will work. Now, they actually asked for training on which solvents would you be most concerned with, Virginia. Very simple. We gave a little hazard communication sheet, you know, avoid the Prop 65 chemicals, avoid the n-hexane. It was great. I'd also like to see less use of aerosols in general. I find that it's a very convenient way for the auto repair industry to decrease, but I do believe pump sprays and aerosols in general are not, I mean, they're environmentally unsafe. It's a container that creates a lot of waste. It's a manufacturing issue to make these containers. We have propellants that aren't necessary. They are polluting the environment. And we're looking for the ingredients within that we're just basically trying to push out of a container. A pump spray could do the same thing. An auto body, an auto repair shop could easily dunk these parts into a stationary aqueous parts washer, and that's been proven successful. The industry has accepted that. And I believe we're a safe place. Anchorage, the original.
Thank you very much. Mr. Raymond?
Well, good morning again, Dr. Sawyer, members of the board. This time that I'm up here, it's not so pleasant. I'm here to oppose one section of this regulation, and that is the rubber and vinyl protectant definition change. There are several issues that I would like to bring up, but to start with, I'm representing the NAA, Stoner, McGuire's, and the Plays Clair Company. I'm going to keep my comments to just a couple of issues, which are the process, the inconsistencies with this, and the lack of clarity. And you will hear from Harry Zeckman from Stoners and from Mark Kubiak from Plays on the technical issues. To begin with, at the beginning of this presentation, you saw that the staff listed numerous things they did to do this process. Unfortunately, with the rubber and vinyl protectant, the process was not clear. It was not transparent. There was numerous facts that were missing. For example, the definition change does not list what products are impacted, does not list what companies are impacted. They did do a survey. I asked repeatedly for that information for that survey. I was given that information 2 weeks ago. That information showed that only 8 manufacturers were surveyed on this issue. In 1997, when this issue originally came up, there were 14 manufacturers with 18 products that were actually surveyed. Now there was only 8. So what we're saying here is there's a lot of information that is not here. What I'd like to really get to is the inconsistency with this regulation. In 2004, when the staff came in front of the board with CONS 1, they treated footwear and leather care products that had were in an aerosol, had a resin as aerosol coatings. And just for a little bit of background, I've worked in this industry for the last 17 years. I was very involved with putting in the aerosol coating regulation, which is the only regulation to date that deals with reactivity, which I believe is the only proper way to deal with the VOC issue. So putting these coating or putting these products into the aerosol coating regulation, I believe, is proper. If you take a look at the staff report from 2004, it clearly said anything with an aerosol and that had a resin and that produced a sometime invisible film was considered under the aerosol coating regulation. That is exactly what we're talking about here with the tire coating product. If you take a look at the protectant or the aerosol footwear and leather care product compared to the tire coating, they are almost identical formulations, and now they're being treated separately. I have a couple more
points. I must ask you to conclude, please.
Okay, well, just to conclude, the staff has acknowledged the fact that there has been a drafting error. It brings in a lot of other categories. We would also like to see the word tire coating. This resolution almost does it. The fact that it says tire coatings are considered tire dressings is inappropriate and not consistent with the 1997 technical support document.
Thank you. Mr. Zechman?
Do you have any questions?
Apparently not.
Good morning, Dr. Sawyer and members of the board. My name is Harry Zechman. I'm technology manager for Stoner Incorporated. Come before you to speak about our concerns relative to CARB's proposed change to the rubber and vinyl protectant product category definition. Stoner is a small, family-owned business located in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Stoner is also a 2003 recipient of the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award. Stoner's been working closely with the ARB staff for approximately 2 years on this issue. We've provided data through written correspondence and have traveled to Sacramento numerous times to give technical presentations to staff. We have a product that will be substantially impacted by this proposed change. Our product is more shine, long-lasting tire coating. This product is a tire coating and is currently subject to the aerosol coating regulation. This product meets the definition of a coating since it contains a resin and produces a continuous film. Tire coatings are a relatively new type of product and evolved to meet market needs since the introduction of the original tire dressings in the 90s. Tire coatings are products that coat the tire with a continuous flexible film to provide a satin or a high-gloss finish. ARB staff states that tire dressings were to be considered in the rubber and vinyl definition originally. Tire coatings are uniquely different from typical tire dressings. In summary, the apparent intent of the rubber and vinyl protectant regulation is to include products which perform any of the following characteristics: protect, shine, clean, renew, restore, revitalize, enhance gloss, rejuvenate. More importantly, there seems to be intent that the regulated products somehow alter the product substrate by absorption of the compounds in the product. Therefore, aerosol tire coatings are a different product than was intended to be regulated. Aerosol tire coatings do protect and enhance the appearance of the substrate. However, an aerosol tire coating does not clean, revitalize, rejuvenate, or restore the substrate. Aerosol tire coatings simply coat the surface of the tire. In today's marketplace, many aerosol products exist for use in footwear and leather care. Several of these products are currently classified and have been classified as aerosol coatings and not consumer products. Our product is very similar to these products, except it is applied to tires, whereas these products are applied to shoes and other footwear items. In conclusion, aerosol tire coatings are not tire dressings, thus tire coatings should continue to be regulated as aerosol coatings. ARB has not released information to support their position on this proposed change. The inconsistencies between the definition and the technical support document need to be corrected to provide clear reasoning for this change. Due to the concerns stated above, ARB staff should defer this action until a new, comprehensive survey is completed. This will allow for an informed decision to be made. Thank you for your time and consideration of this issue.
Thank you.
I have spent a little bit of time on this, and I would like to just quickly get staff's input. And where I'm confused and I keep vacillating is on the definition of the coating versus a protectorant and those other characteristics.
I think in the definition of rubber and vinyl, it specifically addresses products put on rubber and tires. And the aerosol coatings regulation never mentioned this substrate or this kind of product. It, in our view, the fact that a tire is shined, it really doesn't matter whether it's a coating or not, that the function, the basic function is performed here, and that is spelled out specifically in the staff report as justification for the rubber and vinyl protectant definition when it was adopted.
Are we going to take a similar position in the foot care and leather?
We are not, because in contrast, for that category, the aerosol products were specifically called out in the aerosol coatings regulation.
Well, is this by hindsight that it wasn't added for the tire? I don't see that as a compelling reason not to look at it for tires. I mean, to me, is there a need for a coating on tires as there is a need for coating on shoes, or is the VOC issue great enough that we're going to say to consumers that we won't do tire coating in California? And then why wouldn't we do something similar in shoes?
Mrs. Berg, rather than getting lost in the forest of definitions, we take a step back and say, what is this market segment, and are we treating the participants in this market segment equitably? And what we meant to do was address the VOC limits that come from polishing tires. And it's a particular segment of the emission inventory, the way we count the tons. And whatever the formulation is to polish the tires, we wanted to reduce VOC from that. And so we don't go from the definitions outward to the tons. We do the segmentation of the inventory by the kind of activity that it is and try to treat people fairly within it. So it would actually be anti-competitive to use this definitional oddity to back out certain products.
And what we found was that there are the vast majority of the products used to do this function are low VOC. Manufacturers that are testifying offer both high VOC and low VOC complying products. They do it differently, and we have to decide, is the fundamental result so different as to justify the higher VOC? And our view is it's not, that the consumer desires and needs will be met with the low VOC products. There may be some change in performance, but that it was adequate to meet the demand, and therefore we feel that it should be regulated as a single category, and we don't get into the, you know, could we call it an aerosol coating dilemma.
And I understand that argument and understand how we reach that. I want to make sure that we're consistent in other categories as well. And so I would just encourage, as we move along, that consistency and that logical progression remain consistent.
We are bringing you another consumer product regulation next year, so we have a chance to revisit other categories and see whether we're holding them to comparable standards.
I have a question also. I'm a little bit hard time understanding how much of this has to do with how the product is applied versus what is actually going on in the tire. I must admit that when I first put protectants on my tires, it was with a brush, which I assume would not have a lot of VOCs and propellants associated with that. And then next I go to a pump, hand pump type application, and this is a spray can. Is that right? Is that the big difference?
Yeah, but there's complying aerosol products also at 10%. These products in question are well above that.
The only reason we get into conversations about product form, Dr. Sawyer, is that when the consumer product statutes were passed, the legislature prohibited us from banning aerosol cans, for example. So we couldn't say there is a water-based liquid product that is superior to all the aerosols and just get rid of the aerosols. We have to do the best aerosols can do, the best that a liquid product can do, the best that a paste product can do, so that those forms get to stay in the marketplace. And that's just a decision the state legislature made.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Kubiak?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is Mark Kubiak. I am with Claire Sperryway Incorporated. I'm the R&D manager. I'm also representing Plays Incorporated, because we're owned by the same holding company. We appreciate the opportunity to speak today on behalf of this rulemaking for consumer products. In consideration of time constraint, I will limit my comments to two categories. The first category is a general purpose cleaner aerosol. I'd like to say that both Blaze and Claire Sprayway support staff's position on the 8% VOC limit to this category. This will provide us with a product that will meet the customer standards. The second issue is the rubber and vinyl protectant definition. Blaze manufactures tire coatings, which are different from tire dressings, that they contain a resin and form a film. These products are an enhancement of the tire dressing and should be considered under the MIR limit of the aerosol coating dressing, of the aerosol coating regulation. Tire coatings are also, they expel much less product to get the same effect as tire dressings. The change in the definition will ban these products. Blaze was not notified of any survey on this category. So to be fair to all, this change should be deferred to until the aerosol coating categories are surveyed next year. In closing, Blaze and Claire Sprayway Incorporated look forward to working with staff on possibly some rewording of the rubber and vinyl protectant definition. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll have Joseph Yost, Eileen Moyer, and Lori Nelson. Mr. Yost.
Thank you, Dr. Sawyer. Honorable members of the board, my name is Joseph Yost. I represent the Consumer Specialty Products Association, or CSPA. In summary, of the 15 different product categories with new VOC limits that are being proposed here today, CSPA represents companies that make 13 of those product categories. As an initial matter, I'd like to commend the staff for their extraordinary efforts that they took to ensure an open and transparent rulemaking. As ARB staff has done in past rulemakings, they took extra effort to ensure that any potentially interested stakeholder had an opportunity to participate in this rulemaking. During the past 15 years, CSPA has worked very effectively and very cooperatively with ARB staff as they have developed the regulations that, as noted in the presentation, have produced more than 170 tons per day of VOC emission reductions. This is a remarkable achievement. And to comply with these very comprehensive regulations over the past 15 years, the consumer products industry has spent hundreds of millions of dollars to reformulate our products to meet the ARB's very aggressive VOC limits. While CSPA worked effectively with ARB staff and other stakeholders on issues related to this rulemaking, we have several minor issues that I'd like to address, and not minor, major issues I'd like to address, that we would like to work, continue to work with ARB staff during the 15-day period. First is liquid disinfectants and sanitizers. CSPA urges the board to give ARB staff additional time to develop unambiguous regulatory language to ensure that the very stringent proposed limit of 1% VOC for these two product categories applies only to those products that have the sole purpose of disinfecting and sanitizing surfaces and not to other currently regulated products. Without a necessary clarification in the most restrictive limit provision of the current regulation, CSBA would have to respectfully oppose the proposed limits to avoid the elimination of important public health products. Of floor waxes and polishes, CSBA believes the 1% limit is not technologically or commercially feasible for all product limits. Therefore, we ask the ARB to direct staff to continue to work with industry to develop a narrowly tailored subcategory for specialized products that in use will produce no more VOCs than products currently meeting the 1% limit. During the pendency of this review, we agreed to work with, accept the 1% across the board limit based on ARB staff willingness to consider submissions under the innovative product provision and the alternative control plan. On the four automotive products, CSBA, has significant concerns with the proposed limit of 20%. It will be a very difficult target for us to meet. We need the additional time for the 10%, and you will hear our companies identify specifically why they need the additional time. In conclusion, CSPA members agreed to accept the tough but challenging standards that the ARB is currently proposing. Let the record of this rulemaking clearly reflect the fact that these are very stringent and technology-forcing requirements. CSPA looks forward to continuing to work with the staff as they go forward to help produce the type of reduction necessary to achieve clean air for all Californians. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you. Ms. Rudin?
Yes. Staff, on his first issue of the definition, I wasn't sure. Maybe you'd like to respond to that. I thought we sort of had that.
Yeah, their key concern here is that products that were subject to cleaning and other limits are now subject to the 1% because they make cleaning and disinfecting or sanitizing claims. We intended to subject products to the 1% that were not previously regulated under cleaning categories, and we believe and agree that there is clarifying language necessary that we need to work on to clearly state that these 1% limits are only to disinfectant and sanitizer products that do those functions solely.
So essentially what I hear you saying, what I hear him saying, is you will work on getting those definitions in the 15-day comment period?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Dr. Stewart.
Ms. Moyer?
Good morning. My name is Eileen Moyer. I'm Director of Regulatory Relations for Reckitt Benckiser. Reckitt Benckiser is a marketer of Lysol disinfectant products, Old English Furniture Care products, Easy-Off Oven Cleaner, and Easy-On Spray Starch. These are categories that are being regulated during this process. We've been working very closely with staff to find appropriate limits that are technologically and commercially feasible. And I think that we've reached some agreements on many of the categories. We are in support of the 70% VOC limit for aerosol disinfectants, and our company has been working for many years to find a way to reduce the VOC limit in Lysol disinfectant spray to have a product that emits less VOCs but is just as efficacious as the product that we are currently selling. So we do think that the 70% limit is a viable limit that will help to protect the home user as well as the institutional user. We had the same concern that CSPA did with the 1% limit, and while we accepted the 1% limit based on the premise it would apply only to liquid sanitizers and disinfectants that were manufactured specifically for that purpose, we did have the concern with the most restrictive limit provision, and we will continue to work with the ARB staff during the 15-day period. So I'm not going to belabor that point. I think everyone understands the issue now, that limit is not feasible for products that disinfect and clean or have other purposes. With that, I just want to thank the ARB staff for working with us. I think that we have very good proposals in the categories that our company has an interest in, and we look forward to continuing to work with them during the 15-day and in the future for the future regulatory processes. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Diodamo.
On this issue of a product that disinfects and cleans, does staff think that some of the manufacturers could get around this if they have a product that disinfects only Could they just market it as something that disinfects and cleans if we were to make this change?
I think this is something we need to work with them on. Yet adding a cleaning claim could subject them to a 4% rather than a 1%, but we don't think that they have the motivation to do that. These products are specifically marketed as disinfectants or sanitizers, in contrast to cleaners. But it's something that we will monitor, and if we see the problem starting to arise through further surveys, then we intend to address it.
If I can just clarify, too, that the majority of the products that serve only to disinfect or sanitize are sold in the institutional market. The consumer market has exceptionally few products that only serve that purpose. You have Lysol spray and you have a few liquid products. But what it would do is bring in a lot more product categories. I don't think you'll see manufacturers change the demand, because the demand is different in the two marketplaces, from the institutional and janitorial market from the consumer. Consumers like products that do more than one, have more than one purpose, particularly when it comes to cleaning and disinfecting. So you're not seeing those sole use products in that retail market as you are in the institutional. And I think the survey bore that out as well.
Yeah, in addition, these products all have to go through rigorous federal and state registration and testing. So a simple label change is extensive work and takes a long time and would require fees and new testing and a number of hoops to jump through. So it's not simply throw a new claim on there and go along.
But we agree that you do have to be careful in the language, that there's no circumvention, and that's why we're asking for the time before we issue the 15-day notice to work out the right language and run it by all parties and make sure that we're okay.
Ms. Nelson, and then we'll have Gregory Johnson, Andrew Hackman, and Edward Pazinski.
Dr. Sawyer and honorable board members, I'm Lori Nelson. I'm here today on behalf of Johnson Diversey, and we wanted to comment on the 1% across the board VOC limit for flexible and non-resilient floor polish wax products. And we are a market leader in this category. We have captured 20% of the market, and in fact, we are larger than the next 8 companies combined in this category. We pride ourselves on our expertise and our knowledge in this category, and we believe we're cutting-edge quality leader. We also believe it's important to know that the board knows that JD is committed to the environment. A couple of examples: we're in the Healthy High Performance Cleaning Program. We participate in the U.S. Clean Green Building Program LEED. We have green product certification with Green Seal. We have a number of other things, but we are committed to the environment. And we also understand the challenge the board is up against in having to look at every product category and to get the maximum feasible reductions. But given that, we also believe that for premier performance products in this category, they are specifically designed to require burnishing as a part of their maintenance, and we think that they do deserve a subcategory. They extend the service life of these products that requires a minimum 3% VOC amount. It's 3 times as long lasting as the 1% product category. We have worked extensively with your staff on this issue. We've been trying to develop a subcategory, and we're convinced that these products meet a very specific need in the marketplace, and that is for acceptable appearance, flooring protection, minimal business disruption, and also to maintain a safe surface for the public. And these the qualities are especially key in areas like retail, hospitality, healthcare like hospitals, and also government facilities, especially those that are open 24/7. Because floor polishes, they require multiple coatings. You have dry time in between each coating. It's very labor intensive, and we think that if you go with the 1%, you could have economic impacts both on business and government. So I want to make 3 quick points on that. One is that the use of these products will not result in increased emissions, because the 3% products last at least 3 times as long as the 1% VOC products. You also have less emissions from the reapplication and the strippers necessary to remove the product. Secondly, JD is not asking for a free ride on this. Even with the 3% subcategory, we would have to reformulate a significant portion of our products, costing the company millions of dollars.
Finally, and this is unfortunate, but we've been trying to work with the staff to develop a subcategory, and we have been unable to clearly differentiate between these two. And so today we are not before you to ask for a to disapprove the 1% across the board, but we are asking for two things. One is it's our commitment. We will work with you and the staff to look at alternative compliance plans, to look at the ACP, the innovative product exemption. I'm almost done. And secondly, to ask that should we be able to differentiate in the future, we're able to come back to the board to ask for the 1%, 3% split, or if the ACP, IPE provisions are not feasible, that we come before you again and have this discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. I think I would like to ask staff to respond to this. I assume that you disagree with the idea that 3% lasts three times as long?
Well, we have not been able. We worked very cooperatively with Johnson Diversey and others, and I think they'll agree that we met numerous times trying very hard to break these products out and find some sort of criteria that could specifically identify them as different. And together we could not do that. So there, we do not have any technical information whereby we could break out this category. Yet the consumer products regulation has a couple of different flexibility options. One of them is the innovative product provision, whereby if you can show your product over the life of its use emits less VOC over time, then you can demonstrate that and formulate a product above a limit. And we have discussed this in great detail with this company, and we think that this is a promising option here for these type of products because we believe they can demonstrate that they will emit less over time. But there's work to be done there. It's not a rubber stamp process. It will take testing and various other options.
Dr. Gong?
Thank you. This is an ignorant question. I don't think I've ever burnished. I don't know what, if I did, I didn't know it. But could you, I'm sorry, I'm not apologizing, but could you just explain what burnishing is for me?
We have our technical experts to talk about burnishing. Yeah.
If you had burnished, you would know it.
Hey, Maurer, Johnson Diversey Technical Director. Burnishing means that you use a high-speed buffing machine, and you might have seen janitors or other people in the building walking around with these machines that actually buff the floor. It's similar to buffing a car, with the lamb's wool applicator, so you get the shine back. It's the same process that's done to the floor. In that regard, mechanically you can repair the surface and get it back into a restorative look without having to reapply product. Ergo, you would have actually less efficiency if you use less product.
Thank you. I have burnished.
Could staff specifically comment on the two requests that were made so that I understand what they're requesting and what our position is?
Ms. Nelson was requesting that should we not be successful at using the innovative product provision or alternative compliance plans, that the board be open and the staff be open to revisiting the 1% limit for products that require burnishing. So she's putting down a marker for a possible rule revision in the future.
Okay, so we're okay there.
We're okay there. That's a marker. We didn't commit to change the rule, but
no,
we're okay.
I understand that. Okay. That covers both items on her list.
Yes. It does. I'm just up here because it was my oversight. I just wanted to say your staff has been marvelous on this issue. We have put a lot of phone calls into them. They've returned all of them, and we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Johnson?
Thank you, Dr. Sawyer, members of the board. I represent the Sherwin-Williams Company today. We manufacture many consumer products in quite a few categories and market them through several distribution chains in the state of California. Today, the particular product category that I'd like to talk about is the rubber and vinyl protectant category. As you've heard earlier, there are a number of products in this category. Some have chosen to formulate to the aerosol coatings regulation. Others have chosen to formulate to the category regulation. And those are two different things. One's an MIR limit, one is a VOC limit. When we looked at this definition in this category, it seemed obvious to us that the intent here was to cover products that enhanced tires and protected rubber, that sort of thing. And tires were specific. So we endeavored to produce products that met the category 10% limit. And even though we're the largest aerosol coatings manufacturer in the country, we didn't try to develop an aerosol coating tire product because we did not feel like it met the intent of the category or the regulation. So we would like to come out in support of the staff resolution to clarify this definition, and we look forward to working with them to do so that this issue straightens itself out.
Thank you. Mr. Hackman? Oh, excuse me, Ms. Bird. No.
Could I just ask a quick clarification of you? Are you in support of the limits as written? And the clarification you're asking for on the aerosols is to not pull in any other intended products?
Yes,
or are
ma'am.
You asking for the coatings to include the tire?
The first. We believe that the limit that's in place now is appropriate, and we've manufactured products to meet that limit, and we don't intend to make coatings to try to make that limit.
But you are still concerned that there might be some definitional problems that might pull in some other products that are unintended other than tires.
We make a large number of clear coating products. We don't market any of them specifically for tires.
And you want to make sure they don't get pulled into this specific
rule.
Yes,
ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for your help.
Be part of the discussion.
Thank you.
Mr. Hackman?
Thank you, Dr. Sawyer, members of the board, ARB staff. My name is Andrew Hackman. I'm here on behalf of the Automotive Specialty Products Alliance, or ASPA. We are an alliance of three national trade associations, and we have over 55 members, the majority of which will be impacted by the regulations that are before you today. We appreciate the work of the staff on the resolution and the proposed changes that you've seen this morning, and we appreciate the hard work that they've done with us, hearing our concerns and working with us on these very challenging standards. Our members manufacture many products that will be directly affected by these regulations, including brake cleaners, carburetor and fuel injection cleaners, engine degreasers, general purpose degreasers, and windshield washer fluid. Now, we believe that all of these products are absolutely essential to the proper maintenance and consumer safety in vehicles. Specifically, brake cleaners are essential to cleaning brake parts and ensuring that vehicles stop when you press on that brake, and you want your brakes to stop when you hit that brake, certainly. Carburetor and fuel injection cleaners are essential to cleaning fuel systems. They are registered with the EPA and have to go through a series of reviews there as well. And they are essential to cleaning fuel systems and allowing tailpipe emissions to go down as well. Engine degreasers remove grease and different particulate matter from engines. They allow engines to run at cooler temperatures, and we believe are also essential to reducing tailpipe emissions. And general purpose degreasers are essential in very many different variety of surfaces and automotive maintenance operations, and we are crucial to be able to be used in a wide variety of surfaces. And windshield washer fluid is crucial to driver visibility in salty and cold conditions as well as rainy conditions. And we believe that the standards that are proposed this morning are extremely challenging and will be very difficult to meet. We think that is witnessed by most of these categories have less than 5% of the market share currently complying with these standards. We've surveyed our members, and we also feel like in the South Coast area, we've seen product sales decline after the adoption of Rule 1171 and the application of this standard. And some of our members will address those sales issues specifically later on. In fact, we believe these standards are so challenging and technologically difficult for our companies that it
could prove to be technologically and commercially infeasible at some point later on. Therefore, we support the review of these regulations 18 months prior to the adoption of the standard. We believe that this additional time, too, for the 20% and 10% standards are absolutely necessary because for small and medium-sized companies, and I know we had a list of larger companies that are seen as having the resources, but we do have a significant majority of members that are small and medium-sized and are going to have to shift our research and development technology capabilities from other parts of their operations to reformulate an entire line of products. For some companies, this is their entire line of products, and they are a small company and have to deal with this in a very expeditious manner. Finally, we do want to support the 25% windshield washer fluid limit. We think it is also very challenging, and we believe that it can be met in the timeframes provided. Finally, in conclusion, again, these standards are very challenging. We very strongly believe that the additional time is necessary to allow our companies to reformulate and manufacture products that meet these standards. Thank you very much.
Mayor Loveridge. As long as I've been on sort of air quality stuff, the general industry request is we need more time, we need to study this more. But let me ask particularly about the automotive cleaners that the South Coast identified that are in place that seem to be working. What would you say to that that premise?
The way the Rule 1171 is structured, if a facility uses more than 160 fluid ounces of an aerosol product per day, they have to then comply with the 25 grams per liter standard. So not all facilities go above that 160 fluid ounces per day. So we're talking about larger facilities that are using those products, and we believe that the standard itself, we've seen a decline in sales for those companies that have tried to remanufacture products for those specific areas. We don't believe that the standard is, in effect, being applied fully across the region because of the 160 fluid ounce exemption.
Are not there, they're identified a number of suppliers of this kind of cleaner?
And some of those suppliers are our members, and they'll talk later on about the decline in sales that they've seen in these product categories.
Thank you. Mr. Pazinski, and then we'll have Adam Schlisker, John Ellert, and Ron Bausnight.
Dr. Sawyer, members of the board, thank you very much for this opportunity. I am Vice President of Laboratory Services for Bridgeview Aerosol, a company that is a formulator and private label packager of many products in the aerosol product form. A number of our customers are people who have been identified as marketers of products being sold in California falling into these categories. I want to commend staff, and I support their proposed revision to the aerosol automotive maintenance products areas, because these products, while the limits that are being proposed are somewhat similar across the board for all four categories, I need to point out that each one of these categories represents a specific type of formulation for a specific end purpose. And in the aerosol product form, this provides a tool for the end use of the product for the end user in the application of the material. We have presently been, as been pointed out, at a certain VOC level, and we see that there are very major challenges present in order to provide the efficacy and the usefulness for these products to the end user. Each one of these categories will produce a specific requirement to maintain that the end user is satisfied with the performance of the product, and the challenges and the re-education that will be necessary in the marketplace is going to be significant. It is our belief as formulators and packagers that staff has properly approached this situation, and that we feel that we will necessarily need all of the time that is being proposed in order to provide the benefits of the products to our end users and to continue with the technology requirements in the future. I thank you very much.
Thank you. I think this would be a good time to take a break for our court reporter, and we'll resume with the three people who I called earlier. This will be a 10-minute break. We'll resume it. 1040.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Isn't it nice to be thought of as great?
Resume the public testimony with Mr. Zalesker.
Dr. Sawyer, as the witnesses are coming forward, staff had a couple of comments they wanted to make about the phasing proposal and some of the testimony you've heard, and see if we can elucidate a little bit more the difference between our perspective and the proposals. Or what's exactly going on in the South Coast? And Mike Scheibel is going to comment on that.
Okay. Just to try to put everything in perspective and what's before the board and the various views being expressed, the modified staff proposal would deliver 70% of the emission reductions from these categories by the original date and would delay for several years the achievement of the final 30% of the emission reduction. So it's stopped down from 45 to 20 and then to 10. The reason why we did this is that we looked at the number of complying products out there in companies. There are in each category approximately 100 products that would need to be reformulated, and that's times we have four separate categories here. And the amount of work to do that and convert to the water system, which we think is the way ultimately the industry would need to go for the, could best go for the 10%, takes more time than the 2008 date allowed. Also, I think there could be some confusion over what's in play in the South Coast and how widespread the aerosol complying products are. As far as I understand from staff, you will find very few of these products if you go out to the typical auto shop or other place where auto products are sold. They're sold into the South Coast because their rule requires larger shops to include the provision that prevents the shops from circumventing the South Coast District's rules on that require very low solvents, typically used in baths. By simply using consumer products. So those shops have the option of either using a complying consumer product in very low volume, a low VOC alternative, which I think you'll hear some of the witnesses talk about because they're the manufacturers of them, or using their bath cleaning system. That's not available, obviously, to most people at the home level or that buy many of these products. So on that, we thought that securing 70% of the emission reductions by the plan date, allowing more time, which we think greatly enhances the chances that when the manufacturers can be successful and not have their businesses disrupted, and second, that the consumers will find acceptable products out there, and we won't have the problem of coming back in a couple of years with a situation where we do not have the kind of products that the consumers expect to have, was worth it. Obviously, we don't like the fact that we delayed the emission reductions of the second half of the regulation. That's not something that's positive about this. The positive side is we think we greatly increase the chance that it will work well and work without disruption to the industry.
Thank you. Mr. Zalesker.
Thank you, Dr. Sawyer, members of the board. Good morning. My name is Adam Salisgar. I'm the Vice President of Technology for CRC Industries Incorporated. CRC is a chemical specialties manufacturer and packager for automotive, industrial, marine, and aviation purposes. CRC's interest today lies in the automotive categories, the automotive maintenance categories, and the electronics cleaners. We do support the two-step process in the automotive categories, the 08 and further reaching out to 12 compliance, and we also agree with the electronics moving out 1 year. Let me just focus for a minute on brake cleaners, if I may. Brake cleaners are a very important part of vehicle maintenance and safety. As Andy Hackman mentioned earlier, when you push the pedal, you want to stop. It is very important for us as we formulate brake cleaners to make sure that these products work well and do not leave residue on the brakes. We believe that going from 45% to 20% is a huge challenge. We will make that challenge in 08, and we also believe that it's an even bigger challenge to go from 20 to 10. We are committed to do that. We are committed to do that to reduce VOCs. We're also committed to do that to reduce the use of toxic air contaminants. We do need that R&D time. As somebody mentioned from staff earlier, we're one of those companies that has products in many of these categories. We have to spread out our R&D resources over all these categories to do the reformulation. So it's very important that we have the time to do it right and do it right the first time. In the electronics cleaning area, as I mentioned earlier, we do agree with moving that out. There is some definitional issues that we need to get through, and we think that we'll have the time to do that proper reformulation by the end of 07. Last thing I just wanted to say is in response to the South Coast issue, we are one of the manufacturers that has a South Coast product. We've had it for approximately 5 years. The feedback that we get and our easiest feedback is by sales. Our sales have decreased in that product by almost 50% in 5 years. At the current rate, we would probably discontinue that product. The reason for discontinuing that product is the feedback that we get is the product does not work. It is a highly charged acetone product. Acetone, as you heard earlier, is commonly used, and we need to do different technology. We need to come up with new ways to meet that 10% because we're not getting the market acceptance that this product deserves. Thank you. Oh, I do want to just say I'm sorry. The staff has been very helpful in working through these issues. I really need to say that they are interested, they are interactive, and patient with us. It is very difficult for us at times to articulate our needs and concerns, and they really do take the time to listen, and they do call us back, and we appreciate that.
Your former customers who have stopped using your product, what are they doing now?
We sell through distribution. It's possible that one of our concerns is that they're going to different things using non-VOC compliant products, and we're also concerned that they may just move away from this kind of technology. We're not really sure how they're getting their job done, and at least in brake cleaning, it's a big deal to make sure that you're using products that are designed for brakes.
Thank you. Mr. Ellert?
Dr. Sawyer and members of the board, I certainly appreciate being here. My name is John Ehlert. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Berryman Products. First and foremost, I would like to echo Adam's statement about the staff members. They have worked hand in hand with us as we look at this difficult challenge we have ahead of us here with regards to the reformulation process. They have listened. They have participated. They've asked a lot of difficult questions, afforded us the opportunity to try and respond, and we certainly appreciate that. These categories mean a lot to our company. They represent a significant piece of our business. These challenges are immense. They're not easy. We do support the recommendations of the staff. We believe we can get there given some additional time. And we again believe that through the allowance of that time, we can get to products that will maintain the performance because it is extremely important. Whether it's brake cleaners, stopping that vehicle, the liability to us if those products don't work. And we have a constituent that happens to have a product that doesn't perform, an accident happens, we face the liability issue. Same thing certainly holds true on carbon choke, throttle body cleaners. If those products don't work, an accelerator sticks because we didn't properly clean that product. All of a sudden, we've got a serious accident on our hands, and again, we face the liability issue. We are committed to making this happen. Our R&D team is working on it. We can get there given this additional time. But without the time, we would have a serious problem. To echo what Adam stated about the products in South Coast, we, as most of the manufacturers, introduced the product. It's virtually acetone. Acetone simply is not working. Our product is also diminishing rapidly in acceptance and overall sales and is on the verge of being eliminated. So, again, just to echo, we support the recommendation of the staff. We look forward to participating with them should there be additional challenges to get there. We feel we can get there. And, again, hope the board will recognize their recommendations. Thank you.
Mayor Loveridge?
I asked this question in a whole ignorance, but if your product is not being used as much, how is the job getting done?
We, again, are not absolutely certain. We sell through distribution as well, so we have limited contact with that actual end user. We just see the diminished sales activity. It has continued to fall off. We are very close to the same declining rate of almost 50% of the volume from its introduction.
So it's not the question of what happens at the place. It's the question that the product is not being bought. Okay.
The acceptance just simply is not there because acetone will not perform the job that can be performed by some of the other solvents that are currently used in the broader-based lower VOC accepted product. We feel that through the extension of time, we can get to some type of a water-based cleaning materials for both, or actually for most of these categories other than the electronic cleaning.
Dr. Gawin?
I guess this question is for staff regarding comments by the two speakers that just came up regarding, I guess, the marketing of these two products, similar products. It's not finding acceptability by the public. Doesn't necessarily equate to efficacy. I think I said that right. So they could still work. It's just that they're not being purchased and ordered, I guess. But looks like they're pointing their fingers a little bit at acetone-based as the active ingredient. Would staff like to comment to that? Is acetone that ineffective or is it effective?
Acetone is a very good solvent. It's an exempt VOC solvent. But it does have some issues in that it evaporates rapidly, and in some cases it evaporates so quickly that you don't get the cleaning job done. And that's why I think the commenter is suggesting that you need, undercurrent technology. You probably need some other organic solvent that has a different evaporation profile that allows the degreasing or cleaning to occur.
And a question for the speaker then. The R&D process, it takes X number of years, from what I gather. Why does it take that long, per se, if you're just changing the percentages? And I'm sure you, like any laboratory, you probably would, look at different percentages as well, not just the lowest, but even lower than that, perhaps, just to see what the results would be.
And I don't claim to be our R&D expert, so I'll only touch on it. And if we've got specific questions, I certainly we've got Ed or others here who can answer that on behalf of industry. But the challenge is, as you look at reformulating these and you look at aerosols, it's a very unique package. You're putting materials in there under pressure. It takes exhaustive testing to get through to find the right blend of those materials that stay in that can without creating a larger safety issue of having a reaction within that container that causes the cans to either explode or have something of that nature take place because you have a reactivity in the can. Those materials under pressure react differently. We need the time to get to formulations that work efficiently, and will continue to provide the performance that our professional end users and heavy do-it-yourselfers expect. They're going to find a solution. Our fear is they're going to go back to reaching out, getting a can of gasoline, trying to clean it with a brush. We've got worse issues then. So we need to have products that perform effectively.
And staff can concur that our past experience in regulating aerosols has been that's the most difficult area because you not only have to get a product, but once you get it out, you're sure it works. But when it's in the can, it's stored. There's interactions. There's been regulations where we've, for example, come back to the board and had to amend the regulations because the technology didn't work out with the aerosol portion. And the way state law is set up, it's a product form that we have to preserve. So the fact that you could do the job differently doesn't allow us to say you don't need this form if it's got a consumer market.
But as was stated by the South Coast people, that some of that, at least with acetone reformulation, seems to be already out there and safe.
I think it's out there, and obviously people are doing the work, but in the shop they also have the bath with the low VOC, so they have other options for, getting the job done. So I think that's what you're seeing. And in terms of, I guess the marketplace is the ultimate test. If you, you put the best product out there you can make and it doesn't sell, that's telling you that there's something else out there that's working better or there's another technique. And it's not really something that we think we can bank on as saying, well, if we force everybody that direction, we'll have happy consumers and happy manufacturers in addition to the VOC reductions.
And again, just to offer up, I would again state that, these typical end users, whether it's not the professional or the heavy do-it-yourselfer, are creating a lot. And I think, again, they would find an alternative source. They're going to use non-VOC compliant products and create even a worse situation if, again, we're not provided the time to get to the right answer, the right solution, and provide them a product that works and works well.
Thank you very much. Mr. Faustknight, and then we will have Larry Beaver, Sean McNear, and Jason Williamson.
Thank you, Dr. Sawyer, and members of the board. I'm Ron Faustknight, and I'm the technology focal point for Shell Global Solutions. We're the technology group who does the product formulation and the product performance evaluations for Shell oil products. Our retail brands are well known. They include Rain-X, Black Magic, Blue Coral, Fix-A-Flat, Gum Out, and others. My particular concern here is the carburetor and fuel injection air intake cleaner aerosol product. Our experience is that consumers will typically spray these products directly into a running engine to use them. This allows consumers to clean the throttle body or the carburetor without disassembling the actual engine. The disassembly is very time consuming, and it's also beyond the capability of many of our customers.
Mike, please.
It's critical that the product's clean deposits inside the air intake system without building deposits further into the fuel system. Cleaning deposits at the throttle body and moving them into the intake ports or the intake valves does not necessarily result in the clean running engine that the consumer desires. The consequences of increased deposits in these areas can include increased carbon monoxide emissions, increased hydrocarbon emissions, and reductions in fuel economy. Now, these reductions in fuel economy also translate into higher carbon dioxide emissions. So it's important that product formulation components not only clean effectively with low VOCs, but that they also get through the combustion process within the engine without building additional deposits. Low VOC components by their nature tend to burn less readily, so that creates a lot of formulation difficulties. It's critical that the formulations are tested for performance and no harm in actual operation. This requires engine testing, which is both very expensive and very time consuming. And that is, it's not simply mixing a formula and giving a quick spray to watch it clean. There's an involved testing process that must be met. So there's a substantial conflict between the three goals, burning completely without creating issues further in the engine, and providing low VOCs and the actual initial cleanup itself. We've heard how parts cleaner processes and elbow grease can solve some of these issues, but that doesn't address the cleaning within the engine when it's not disassembled. And we've also heard how, larger companies and automakers support these products, but we've also seen that additive products are specifically not recommended by many automakers, but also sell the same additive products. So that doesn't necessarily tell the whole story.
Thank you. Mr. Beaver?
Good morning, Dr. Sawyer and members of the board. I'm Dr. Larry Beaver, Vice President of Technology at Radiator Specialty Company. Radiator Specialty Company is a small family-owned business that has manufactured for over 82 years specialty chemical products for use in the home and the shop, things such as liquid wrench, penetrant and lubricant, Dunk Engine Bright, and the solder seal products for sealing radiator leaks. I'm here today to offer our support to the proposed revisions, the 15-day proposal made by the CARB staff. We believe that this is reasonable compromise. We also fully support and fully commit to work towards these new deadlines. I had originally intended to speak primarily about engine degreaser, but the comments about brake cleaner forced me to make a bit of a comment. My esteemed colleagues have mentioned that sales have dropped as an indication of consumer discomfort with the new formulas or dislike of the new formulas. The folks in my lab talk to customers every day. We're almost first stop when they have a complaint. I've spoken to customers personally who have used our acetone-based ultra-low VOC product, and they don't like it. It doesn't work. They have to use too much of it to get the job done. So you trade a low-performing product, you push it into the marketplace, and they just use more of it, and it becomes even more of an issue. So we see here a case, I believe, based on the customers that I've personally talked to, where we've legislated an inferior product, forced it on a customer who doesn't like it. We don't want to do that again. I am concerned about the engine degreaser category. We fully support the staff's proposal, but we need to make sure as we move forward, particularly in a category such as a degreaser on an assembled engine, we don't have the option of being able to take parts off, put them in a bath. You have to make sure it works. We sell through distribution to professional mechanics all over the United States and Canada. Engine Bright engine degreaser is a staple. We have the lion's share of the market. We understand engine degreasing. We also know that it takes very specific solvent and surfactant combinations to penetrate the baked-on grease and dirt on an engine block and allow that to be rinsed off with a minimal amount of rinsate and a minimal amount of product use. So as we move forward, we appreciate the board staff's work with us and their willingness to deal with the issues at hand. And we thank you for the opportunity to comment today, and I would ask if you have any questions.
Apparently not. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. McNair.
Good morning, Dr. Sawyer and board members. My name is Sean McNair. I represent Honeywell Consumer Products Group as a manager of regulatory affairs. Honeywell Consumer Products Group produces and distributes automotive aftermarket products such as Prestone car care products, Autolite spark plugs, Fram filters, and Bendex brakes. Honeywell employs over 3,000 people in 57 facilities in the state of California. Honeywell produces multiple automotive products that will be affected by the current proposed consumer products VOC regulation. This morning I will speak to the windshield fluid, washer fluid category. Honeywell manufactures the Prestone de-icer windshield washer fluid. This product is categorized on a windshield washer fluid as a proposed VOC limit of 25% in type A areas. The current VOC limit for this category is 35%. Honeywell is committed to work with the California Air Resources Board in reducing VOC product categories that are commercially and technologically feasible. Honeywell has actively participated in the workshop meetings throughout the year, and we presented the information at the automotive windshield washer category at the industry meeting on July 13th, 2006 to the CARB staff. The de-icer windshield washer fluid category provides very important safety benefits compared to the typical blue washer fluid without refreeze protection. Those include attributes such as freeze protection within the washer system, removal of road grime from the windshield, and refreeze protection of the fluid once it is sprayed on the windshield. As we have demonstrated in our submitted comments, the cost associated with this proposed change is not trivial. CARB has recorded very low costs for product reformulation. Based on our experience as a formulator for automotive chemical-based products, the cost of reformulation ranges from more than double to almost eight times the amount listed in Appendix A of the proposed regulation. The cost is dependent on how extensive the reformulation would be. The change from 35% VOC to 25% is not just a 10% reduction in VOC. One point that is not very clear in the final proposed regulation is the fact that the proposed 25% VOC limit for this category will reduce the freeze point of this product. There's a loss of about 22 degrees Fahrenheit. In order to address the impact of this change in freeze point, some amounts of LVP solvents must be used. Also, We must add other materials to the formulation to provide value to consumers, such as precipitation and soil repellency and refreeze protection. These changes would be considered an extensive reformulation. As I've stated, there are significant costs to manufacturers to meet these proposed VOC limits for the automotive windshield washer fluids. In a category that is very cost competitive, these extra costs would be passed down to the consumer. Also, the new limits affects overall performance, which cannot be entirely recovered through other ingredients. Although there are formulation hurdles to overcome, Honeywell supports the proposed VOC limit of 25% for the automotive windshield washer category in Type A. And just in conclusion, as a member of the Consumer Specialty Products Association and the Automotive Specialty Products Alliance, Honeywell supports the comments and recommendations on the automotive categories presented to California Resources Board. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. I would like to ask staff about window washer fluids. It seems to me that this is a very inefficient product in that most cars most of the time in California don't experience freezing conditions. But when you do have freezing conditions, you certainly want to have your windshield washers not put ice on your windshield. But are there other approaches to minimizing the use of VOCs in window washers?
We have differing VOC limits in different areas of California. Where freezing temperatures are not likely to occur, we have a 1% VOC limit, and that is the overwhelming majority of the state. That would be the coastal and valley areas. In the mountainous regions where wintertime freezing temperatures occur often is what we're looking at this time, and that's why we've afforded a 25% VOC limit for that freeze protection. So this is a fairly, in terms of pounds of sales, it's a fairly small part of the market, but it is a high emitter.
And are consumers pretty savvy about this and moving from one area to another and not having the wrong kind of washer fluid in their cars?
I think that the education is going on at the retail shops as we speak. I think there was an adjustment period on the initial implementation of the limits, but I have talked to numerous distributors and auto parts companies, and they are coming on board, and they do understand the regulations and when you can use the low emitting and when you need the freeze protection. I think that some guides such as AAA or others recommend that if you're going to travel to ski areas that you check your fluid and make sure you have freeze protection in addition to other aspects of traveling to cold climates.
It seems like it might be a good opportunity to educate the public to better protect themselves and to save money, for that matter. I know I put water in my window washers during the summer. But okay, thank you. Mr. Williamson, and then we will have Norman Plotkin, Douglas Fratz, and Catherine Porter. Mr. Williamson.
Good morning, Dr. Sawyer and members of the board. My name is Jason Williamson, and I'm here on behalf of Valvoline, the Consumer Products Division of Ashland Incorporated. Valvoline has greatly appreciated the opportunity to work with the ARB staff on these proposals, and we're very supportive of improvements to air quality, not only in California, but in all areas. A couple of examples that I might offer are some internal controls that we have placed to eliminate toxic air contaminants such as N-hexane in our consumer product line, and also the using a low VOC formulation where viable in non-regulated areas outside of California as well. Valvoline offers a wide array of products in the marketplace, not only to help consumers maintain the appearance of their automobiles, but also to keep them in a safe and proper working order. Today I have a couple of comments regarding the automotive cleaning products. Brake parts cleaners are used by both professionals and amateur car enthusiasts for a variety of reasons. This product line provides benefits of fast and efficient cleaning, dust suppression, and they're easy for the consumers to use. It is a great concern of ours that if we do not put in the correct research and development over the longer extended time frame that the staff has proposed, that we may come up with a product that is less effective and more materials would be used in the end application. One of the things that I'd like to mention is we too offer in the South Coast area a compliant product. In the last few years, we've lost about 40% of our sales volumes on that material. It's in danger of being cut as well. We're very willing to continue to explore the options necessary to meet the difficult standards set forth in this proposal for these and other products. However, we must recognize that it will not be an easy task. It will take a large investment of time and money to achieve this goal. We do hope that to continue to work on this, and if it becomes apparent from the technical reviews or from other discoveries with the ARB staff that these limits are not feasible, that they be reconsidered at a later date. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Plotkin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, honorable board members. Norman Plotkin, representing the Automotive Aftermarket Industry Association and the California Automotive Wholesalers Association. Together, there are nearly 10,000 members, represent, manufacture, distribute, sell, install auto parts, equipment, and service. We have concerns over the four categories: the brake cleaners, carburetor, fuel injector cleaners, engine degreasers, and general purpose degreasers. For all of the reasons that have been previously articulated, but for the chief among them was the brake cleaners and the potential hazard that that would pose with the reduction to the levels indicated. We're concerned that the reductions undermine the ability to effectively maintain vehicles, and that's the feedback that we're getting from the members in the field, the men and women who actually work on the cars. We understand the agreement and the phase-in, and we accept that, and we've gone neutral on the proposal at this time, but we want to just stress that we have concerns that remain. We're hopeful that if anticipated hazards do arise, as many of our folks in the field believe that there will be hazards associated with reduced levels of brake cleaner, that if the anticipated troubles do arise, that the board will have another look at this situation and revisit it. So, with that said, appreciate the opportunity to speak before you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Fratz?
Dr. Sawyer, board members, good morning. My name is Doug Fratz. I'm with the Vice President of the Consumer Specialty Products Association. I've been involved in these consumer products rules since 1989, the very first rule. And despite the continuing excellent and professional work of your staff, this probably has been the most difficult one yet to date. Before I continue, I wanted to go back very early in the session and address an issue that is the growing emissions of consumer products, growing with the population of California. And the projections that have us being number one VOC source in the South Coast after 2020. This is a situation that we're certainly concerned about, as you are. And I think it's important to understand, however, that we are a very low reactivity source. And if you look at our actual ozone impact at any point during there, it's much lower than you would expect based on our actual emissions. And we in fact, in the late 90s, did some computer modeling and found that even eliminating all of our consumer product emissions, well, it wouldn't have a measurable impact on the ozone standard and the compliance with the standard. But we are still dedicated to working every way possible to reduce both our emissions and our reactivity and our ozone impact in general. The new VOC limits proposed are very, very challenging. It would require us, it's going to require industry to have 1,000 to 1,200 products reformulated most in the next 2 years. There'll be 100 companies trying to do this. Those companies include many small and mid-sized companies that have very limited R&D staff. There's going to have to be significant staffing up in many of these companies. It's going to cost overall, according to your staff's estimates, around $200 million for our industry to do this. This is not a small commitment we're making to work with you on this. There are very significant challenges specific to these various products. Obviously, the automotive maintenance products have to maintain automotive safety and effective maintenance. Floor polishes have to maintain both protection and a safe walkway surface. The disinfectants and sanitizers have to kill the pathogenic organisms that are needed for various surfaces. All of our products have very special benefits that have to be maintained. We can't fail. We have to also keep our brand name strong. For many of our companies, the brand names are their most important asset. So we're taking on this very significant undertaking, but we don't know that we're going to succeed. But we are committing to work as hard as we can to succeed. And if we do fail, we will come back to you and work out want a commitment to work out how we can both succeed in this endeavor. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Bird?
I think we've heard a couple of times on the reactivity issue, and I'd appreciate a comment from staff as to how we see that we're moving forward on reactivity issues with the VOC types products.
California innovated marginal incremental reactivity adjustment factors, and after many years got US EPA to approve them as an element of our consumer product regulations. At the moment, they apply to aerosol coatings only. We're looking at applying them to other categories. And when we model ozone exceedances, we do look at reactivity of VOC in those analyses. But where it works in lieu of mass reductions, we're certainly open to considering that kind of a reformulation.
So even on the products that we're talking about today, companies are able to use reactivity?
No, they're not. Only for aerosol coatings, okay, where there was a large range of reactivity in the kinds of VOCs that were being used for coatings. As Carla mentioned earlier this morning, a lot of these products are already relatively low reactivity. But in the meteorology of the South Coast Air Basin, where we have multi-day ozone episodes, even low reactivity products will react eventually to form ozone. So we still need regulations at the lower end. But when we did aerosol coatings, we had high reactivity components we were able to phase out with MIRs.
Just to add a little bit to that, too, one of the things we're going to be looking at when we bring additional consumer products categories back to the board later next year will be reactivity for one of the categories, and that's hairspray. We're currently working with the hairspray manufacturers, helping them to understand the reactivity concepts, perhaps doing some research and developing MIR values, reactivity values for specific compounds used in those products, to see if there might be an option there for reactivity to be used in consumer products.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Porter, and then we will have Chip Brewer and Patrice Sutton.
Hello, my name is Catherine Porter, and I'm with WorkSafe, which is a nonprofit organization that advocates for worker health and safety and non-toxic workplaces. We're here supporting the staff's original recommendation for a VOC limit of 10% that would be implemented in at least 2008, and we'd actually prefer an earlier implementation. Now, I've heard many times, in fact, most manufacturer representatives that have gotten up here have said something about this standard is challenging to them. And I'd like to question whether there's anything in the regulation that says that whether a standard is challenging should be the basis of a regulatory decision. My understanding is it has to do with technical feasibility, which there's been a lot of evidence today here talking about that, in fact, a VOC limit of 10% in these products, automobile aerosol cleaning products, is in fact possible now. I'd also like to raise the issue of the challenge to health, the challenge to environment, and the huge costs that our system bears when workers are sick, when community members are sick. The costs our health system bears, the costs our government systems bear, when people are sick or when the environment is sick. I'd also like to question industry. Several said that they have been losing market share on their product, and I would be interested in knowing what kind of research and development they've done then to start trying to come up with a product that does have low VOC limit and still be effective. My concern is that they're waiting and hoping that they won't have to reach that VOC limit, and so they won't have to do research and development to find a low VOC product. I'm also wondering what sort of input staff received from health organizations, worker organizations, environmental organizations on these VOC limits. I've heard lots of manufacturers talk about how they're grateful for staff working so closely with them, for taking all their phone calls. I think there needs to be an effort made to make sure that the whole panoply of interests are included during this regulatory process. Maybe I'm missing out on information, and in fact, they have connected with a lot of organizations and have gotten input on this issue. Finally, another question I have is, there was mention of an 18-month, I believe, maybe I'm not remembering it correctly, 18 months before the implementation deadline, there would be a check-in with industry. And I'm wondering what the purpose of that check-in is. And my concern is the purpose will end up being listening to the continued challenges of the manufacturers in coming up with a low VOC limit, and the deadline would be extended even further. So again, we support the 10% VOC limit on auto aerosol cleaning products, and that should be implemented the sooner the better. 2007 for us would be preferable, but at least 2008. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brewer?
Mr. Chairman and board members, my name is Chip Brewer, and I'm Director of Worldwide Government Relations for the S.C. Johnson Company. S.C. Johnson is located in Racine, Wisconsin, but I am here today also speaking on behalf of the men and women who work at our manufacturing facility in Fresno. S.C. Johnson is a global manufacturer of household products. Some of our brand names include Windex, Pledge, Raid and Off insect control products, scrubbing bubbles, cleaners, Edge and Skintimate shave gels. A common thread here is that not only are these products made by S.C. Johnson, but every one of those brands is regulated under VOC limits that have been adopted by the ARB. I speak today for three reasons. First, I want to commend the staff, as others have, for their efforts in this CONS 2 rulemaking. This staff is tough, but this staff is fair. The staff, I think, understands the statutory requirements of the California Clean Air Act, that they have to achieve the maximum achievable emissions reductions, but do it in ways that are commercially and technically feasible. And the word commercially feasible is in the statute. And I think it's not often easy to balance these two requirements or several requirements, but I think the staff tries to do that in a very fair in a very transparent way. Second, I want to echo what's been said earlier. Oh, and incidentally, in terms of that, in terms of this particular rulemaking and the process, S.C. Johnson supports the VOC limit that's being proposed for the air sanitizer category. Second, I want to echo what's been said about the disinfectant sanitizer definition. There is a true problem here, compliance problem that will be created if this is not remedied. I think David Mallory earlier in his description
of the problem in response to a question from the board. He nailed it, and I think we've got to fix it, and I was happy to hear a commitment by staff to do that. Third, I know I just have a limited amount of time, but I wanted to speak kind of off the subject of Cons 2 for a moment. You are currently in a process to revise your SIP, and you will be adopting amendments next year. I just want to urge some necessary caution that when you put limits, VOC mass reduction limits in the SIP, that you do so recognizing that a lot of the low-hanging fruit, if you will, has already been picked in terms of VOC reductions. We've already attacked the major categories, achieved major reductions. That's been a credit both to your regulatory regime and the R&D efforts of industry. But we've got to be very cautious about what we can do in terms of VOC mass reductions for some of these categories in the future. And if I could just one last moment, Dr. Sawyer, you mentioned earlier reactivity as being maybe a promising area. You should be aware that industry has proposed an early draft of a innovative product exemption that would involve using reactivity and changing materials based upon the reactivity as a way to not necessarily decrease the mass VOC of a product, but to increase the actual ozone-forming impact of such products. And we're hoping that we can continue discussions with staff about that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Sutton. Ms. Sutton, excuse me.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I've worked in public health. My name is Patrice Sutton, and I've worked in public health for 2 decades doing environmental and occupational health research. And I'm here today speaking for myself. And I came today because I've worked for the last 2 decades with communities and workers who've been impacted by toxic substances in the environment that they either work in or in their communities. And I'm here because you have such an important opportunity to do something for public health. So I wanted to strongly urge you to support the original recommendation to reduce the VOC content in automotive repair to below 10% to in 2008 or sooner, as Catherine Porter had just mentioned. I strongly oppose extending the deadline and increasing the limits. And I just wanted to refocus the direction of this meeting on terms of a group of end users who have not been well represented. That's actually the communities and the workers who are exposed to the toxic substances. That is really the subject of this discussion, people who are harmed by these products. And while you can measure, the thing that you have the ability to do is VOCs can be measured in the environment, but we have very limited ability to actually measure health impacts to workers and communities from these substances. So you have an opportunity to make a strong regulation that will actually improve public health. One of the things that has been brought up is that the flammability of acetone. I just wanted to mention that it is true, but this is a very controllable hazard, and this is a much, much, much safer from a standpoint of public health alternative than what is currently used in terms of these toxic materials. Acetone doesn't cause cancer, and it doesn't cause chronic health effects. And although there was talk about things that are easy to get the job done, I have no doubt that it is much easier to use methylene chloride and benzene for many uses, but maybe that's not the whole point. Maybe, in fact, we don't really want to make something so easy for a person to be exposed to that they can harm themselves. I wanted to just reiterate that there are solutions that are available. There's been ample testimony to that fact. They're in use. The reductions have been achieved. So I would ask, why would we not duplicate the success of the South Coast Air Quality District here? I would wonder what we would tell the families and workers who have been harmed by these products for not taking the action as soon as possible for things that are totally achievable now. The government can actually be responsive to their needs right now, and particularly in terms of automotive repair products. I just wanted to say that hazardous work can be made less hazardous. And you're making the automotive repair VOC content below 10% by 2008 or sooner can actually make a hazardous job safer for the people who are exposed. So I urge you to support the original proposal. You have the capacity to improve public health, and I urge you to take it. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. That concludes the public testimony. Ms. Witherspoon, does staff have further comments?
Only in response to questions from the board.
I will now close the record on this agenda item. However, the record will be reopened when the 15-day notice of public availability is issued. Written or oral comments received after this hearing date but before the 15-day notice is issued will not be accepted as part of the official record on this agenda item. When the record is reopened for a 15-day comment period, the public may submit written comments on the proposed changes, which will be considered and responded to in the final statement of reasons for the regulation. I would take our usual ex parte reports at this time.
Yes, I had a phone conversation on November the 9th with Doug Raymond, a consultant with Raymond Regulatory Resources, and Harry Zeckman with Stoner Incorporated, and our conversation mirrored the testimony heard today. I had a brief sidebar comment with Doug Raymond this morning, and the comments also mirrored the testimony that we heard today.
Thank you. Dr. Gawin? Adamo.
I too spoke with Doug Raymond, consultant at Raymond Regulatory Resources, and Harry Zeckman with Stoner Incorporated, a telephone call on November 3rd, and their comments were consistent with the comments that they raised today.
No. A
conversation with Lee Locke during the break. And it was more or less consistent with what was presented to this board.
Okay. Thank you. We have a resolution before us, and we need to decide what to do about it. Is there any further discussion, Mayor Leverage?
Let me make 3 points and then a question if staff could react to it as a possible amendment to the resolution or the direction. First point is we're in the South Coast, we're working on the update of the AQMP and realizing really how difficult it is to in the search for tonnage. I think Chip Brewer mentioned the low-hanging fruit. I mean, we're now long since past the low-hanging fruit. We're looking for anything we can identify, and I think you recognize the kind of pain that particularly stationary sources have had to accept. The second point is that I remember a column by George Will, which I thought was particularly persuasive to me, that he was talking about actions in the South Coast, and he pointed up in his column, talked about 16 million people. We now have 18 million people, but his point was, when 18 million people do anything, it has real consequences. The 18 million people now in Southern California get around by cars. There's probably over 20 million cars, and I guess not to mention other kind of vehicles in the South Coast Basin. So when we do things with our cars, there's a lot of people doing things. The third is, I think there is a role for technology forcing to you know, for many years you hear, we need more study, we need more time, and I think the regulatory board's roles are to try to encourage technology forcing, and so that's really a question I would like to ask staff as a proposed amendment, is that we, rather than look for 2012 as the time where 10%, if we advance the time to 2010, as opposed to 2012, if staff would respond to that possible change. And again, it seems to me we do have an interest in technology enforcing. It's a compromise from what the staff originally proposed to what is currently being proposed.
We can't say for sure that that would solve all the industry problems. Clearly, it would give them enough time to reformulate and get the emission reductions sooner, it would probably raise the chance that some of them would not be successful. And they would probably say that that lowers the chances of them getting there in time. We did not have the kind of detailed plans from them to say it needs to be 2012. They convinced us, based on the number of products and the massive job that was facing them.
Just another comment. If we retained the 18-month technology review ahead of 2010, we would be bringing that before the board 6 months after they had complied with the 20% limit. And some might be forced to just leapfrog because there wouldn't be a lot of time. That could happen. And alternatively, they might not have done enough of the R&D for the second phase to give us a clear answer. But just one other way of looking at it. You can do technology reviews, and since that's part of our general regulatory process, I mean, it allows you to push it back out if you need to.
Sure, I just told out the possibility of using 2010 rather than 2012.
Is that a formal proposal that we change it to 2010? Or?
Yes.
And do other board members have comment about this?
Chairman Sawyer, I don't think the resolution has yet been moved and seconded, so that would be a good first step.
Okay. Do I have a motion to adopt the resolution as presented?
I'd move that.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Wait. I'm confused. Point of clarification.
We have an amendment proposed to this that the date be changed from 2012 to 2010, and we'll now discuss the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, having seated myself here during a consumer product review at some time back, I want to be successful. It is, I think, very discouraging for us to have then a review and a time when industry has to come before us and say again that they couldn't meet the date. I think the staff, and I believe our staff is very conservative, have made a recommendation that is, in their judgment, a reasonable one to find that most of the companies that participate in these consumer products can be successful. And I think that's very important. Sometimes, and I can think of one very specific product in the past that we regulated, simply couldn't meet the standards that we set, and they literally left California. I hate to see that occur. I would like to think that we can have a program that protects the public's health and at the same time allows for the products and the economic viability of those products to continue in California. So, knowing the staff and knowing that they're rather conservative, I'm going to be very supportive of their amendment to the proposal that we have before us.
I realize that I made a procedural error.
That's all right.
We don't have a second to the proposed amendment. Is there a second?
To the staff amendment.
No, to
to the proposed amendment to the staff proposal.
To Mayor Leverage's proposal. Well, do we have a second?
I'd like to second it so we could have further discussion.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. Excuse me. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think we've always had these sort of two competing interests of maybe we can't do it as quick as you would like versus why don't you do it overnight? And we've had this discussion on every issue. I think we've enjoyed the success that we have on the many years I've been on this board because we've tried to work with the industry. You know, it's one thing to say we'd like to wave a magic wand and we'd like all pollution, we should just outlaw it today. Okay, there shouldn't be any pollution. We know that. But the fact of the matter is it takes time to bring these things to market, to develop them. And I think what staff came in here was a reasonable proposal. And that proposal was that in 2008, you'd have 70% of the benefit. 70% of the benefit, and then we would carve out and give some time to develop those products over the next 4 years. That's not an unreasonable request in any way, shape, or form. And what I'm hopeful for is within that time frame, and we'll know when we get those reports 18 months out how we're doing. And no one can say with certainty that, that's going to work or that we're not going to have other complications. So I think what the staff has given us is a very good proposal. I think it's in keeping with all the basic tenets and why we've made and continue to make progress. And I'm going to support that, not support the amendment.
Bert?
I would like to see on the industry review that that would take place in 2010. Is that correct, the industry review? So sooner in 2010 than later. And secondly, I hope that we would really spend some time in South Coast, where you would have another 2 years to really get your statistical information and those shops that are using these products, and we could get those facts verified and actually before this group, and that we would make concerted efforts to push industry into moving forward and come back to us in 2010 with maybe some good news that this has moved along faster than we thought it would. So putting industry on notice that, yes, the first step down in 2 years is great, and then don't let up. And if you can deliver those savings before, or the additional step down before the next 4 years, that would be the goal. And therefore, I would support the staff recommendation.
Dr. Gong?
Just a comment on Mrs. Berg's request for review in 2010. With the 2012 deadline, as staff proposed for the 10% compliance, the review happens, and that's end of 2012. The review at 18 months ahead is the middle of 2011. And so are you asking for another review in 2010, which we could be, staff would be pleased to do about our progress after the first milestone in 08, so we would break the review before 2012 into two technology reviews?
I think that what I'm asking for is that we need to keep the pressure, and we need to solicit industry's priority in this area. And so I am a little hesitant that I know it's a lot of products. I know how difficult formulation can be. I also know that the squeaky wheel gets the grease, so to speak. And so I think we really want to keep the focus. And so that's what I'm asking.
Okay.
Dr. Gong.
Well, I think everyone has given a very nice presentation of their viewpoints. I compliment both the staff and also the witnesses on both sides of this issue. I think rather than get into a long dialogue, I just think that public health is of great importance to me for obvious reasons. And I think that technology forcing regulations probably are a way to go. And I understand that there are many challenges, quote-unquote, including burnishing. But, you know, I think I would support Mayor Leverage's statement, amendment, again, for the protection of public health. The faster we protect public health, the more we do for public health. And I think that's, for me, very important. And trumps many of the issues.
Thank you.
Ms. Diodama?
I would agree with Ms. Berg about a technology review and using that as an opportunity to move the industry along. But I think that if we keep the date of 2012, I think industry is going to view that as an opportunity to come in through a review and say, well, we can't make 2012. So I'd rather utilize an earlier technology review with an earlier date, recognizing that we need to be responsible about this. I support Mayor Loveridge, but at the same time, I want to be responsible. And you all have worked on this so much longer than we have at the board level. I favor an earlier date, but I think we need to have some other alternative by way of a technology review in order to do the right thing, because as Mrs. Reardon indicated, we've got to do this right. We don't want to see companies leaving California's marketplace. So the question that I have of staff is, if we had a technology review and an earlier date, what would be a way to utilize them in a way that they complement each other?
Well, I just realized I misspoke earlier. If we moved it to 2010, it'd be the end of 2010. And so the technology review would be in the middle of 2009. And that's probably a good point at which to review the industry's progress. And the prior 20% standard would take effect at the end of 2008. So it's a good balance point.
But no, I'm wondering how where a technology review would fit in with Mayor Loveridge's earlier.
Middle of 2009, because he's proposing end of 2008. I mean, end of 2010, excuse me.
Okay, so right. Mayor Loveridge, would you be willing to accept an addition to your amendment that we have a technology review of the end of, what did you say, the end of 2009? Middle of 2009.
Middle of 2009, 18 months ahead of the deadline. As proposed to be amended by Mayor Loveridge.
Are there any other comments from board members? Are we ready to, I assume then we're ready to vote on the amendment. Ms. Kennard.
You believe this proposal of an accelerated review and end date is feasible from a staff standpoint?
At this moment in time, we believe the industry is going to need the full amount of time we propose to the end of 2012 to reach the 10% limit, but we can evaluate that in the middle of 2009 and see whether a faster schedule is feasible as Mayor Loveridge is proposing, or if our original proposal, and it would take a rule amendment to put 2012 back, if they still need that time, and you would be adopting 2010 under Mayor Loveridge's proposal in the meantime.
Okay. So the technology review would sort of come automatically before 18 months before the deadline, no matter what the deadline is.
I think it's our opinion that it's more likely we'd be proposing a rule change. But if it turns out that it can be done faster, then you get the benefits faster. So it's how do you want to go about getting the benefits? Everyone agrees that we need to get there and we need to get to the lower level. What's the best route to get there, and what's the fairest route for industry and the best health protective route for the citizens?
Supervisor Patrick.
Thank you. I just have a very quick question, and that is, as industry is moving to the 20% threshold, what is the likelihood that knowing that there's a 10% threshold out there in a relatively short period of time, that they're going to skip past the 20% to the 10%?
I don't think that's too likely, because the 20% it's like you're just lowering the content of the stuff that's there now. You're not reformulating. And I think part of the industry, when we put out the original proposal, was basically saying we can't go there, and was proposing a very modest reduction as something they could do. And the additional time to 2012 was tied to their commitment to do a very substantial reduction in the first year and a half, which will take effort, and they'll have to devote effort to that. So they will probably, in order to get that early reduction, their resources are limited. They won't be able to start the effort to get to the final limit as soon as, immediately after the rule's adopted. So they have to invest in two changes, and we get a 70% benefit early on. So we thought that was a fair way of going ahead.
Berg.
Is this a fair time to bring up one other issue? I just had a question of staff. Are we done with the automotive side? I don't want to break the thought.
Please go ahead.
I just want to understand the 15-day change for the rubber and vinyl and where that, where this change, or if there's any more discussion in regards to the coatings product versus the lubricant products on the rubber and vinyl. The rubber and vinyl change. My understanding, there's a 15-day change that is being proposed to look at additional clarifications in the definition.
Right. The staff proposal is to make sure that the rule includes and covers tire coatings or tire products, but does not cover other aerosol coatings that are used for other purposes. And so we have to make sure that the definition is written properly to do that.
Okay. Since we have included the tire coatings before under the aerosol rule, is there any additional conversation that needs to be had to allow them to reformulate, since this rule goes in effect 2 years and they have to reformulate from 67% down to 10%?
Staff believes we never included tires in the aerosol coatings, that was a misinterpretation of the 1997 rule by certain manufacturers. And so what our staff proposal did is close that loophole and said you weren't supposed to be doing that all of this time. And then when we wrote the language to close the loophole, we got supplemental comments that now we created some other issues that we needed to avoid. But no, we're not offering extra time on that reformulation other than the effective date of this closed loophole.
We don't see that it's not the same issue. In the tire area, there are many, many complying products, and the formulas are known. I think the industry does not anticipate being able to reformulate its thing that looks more like an aerosol coating down to the lower limit. Other products will substitute and do the function.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
It's just one final comment. There's a huge deficit when we look at the AQMP for Southern California, and increasingly the look is not to the basin or not to the South Coast District. It's a look to CARB and EPA for reduction, and I think that's part of what is being the judgment we're making today.
Okay, we need to first vote on the amendment to change the deadline for the 10% limit from 2012 to 2010. And I would ask the clerk to call the roll.
And can we just agree that that includes a technology review?
Yes.
That we will then hear that technology review and either confirm the date or decide when the next appropriate date would be.
That's correct.
Although, to just make it clear, in other words, in order to change the date, we would have to go through a whole rulemaking.
Would the clerk please call the roll?
Ms. Berg?
Yes.
Ms. Diadema?
Yes.
Dr. Gong?
Yes.
Ms. Kennard?
Yes.
Mayor Leverage? Supervisor Patrick? Mrs. Bergen?
No.
Supervisor Roberts? Dr. Sawyer?
Yes.
Motion passes. We have 7 yeses and 2 noes.
Thank you. Are we prepared to vote on the main motion as amended this time? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Fine. Thank you very much.
That's the one.
Following our usual procedures, we now have opportunities for members of the board to provide comments on any item that they would desire to do so. Are there any requests for board comments? We conclude our meetings with board comments. And are there any requests for comments from members of the public at this time? If not, our meeting is adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.